Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 4th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 515-604-9386, and our participant code is 419303. If your cell provider blocks or charges for this call, you can call our backup number at 781-838-3728. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions, it's plural, to questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is in Matthew. We're going to pick up where we left off, chapter 15, verses 21 through 31. That's Matthew, chapter 15, verses 21 through 31. Then Jesus went and departed into the coasts of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coast and cried unto him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil. But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and besought him, saying, Send her away, for she crieth after us. But he answered and said, I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs. And she said, Truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Then Jesus answered and said unto her, O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. And Jesus departed thence and came nigh unto the Sea of Galilee, and went up into a mountain, and sat there. And great multitudes came unto him, having with them those that were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, and many others, and cast them down at Jesus' feet, and he healed them, insomuch that the multitude wondered when they saw the dumb to speak, and the maimed to be whole, the lame to walk, and the blind to see, and they glorified the God of Israel. Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 31. Okay, tonight, by the way, hopefully I'm coming through all this time. Let's see, who's out there? Robert, am I coming through or Carl?
Yeah, coming through fine.
Yeah, you're coming through fine.
All right, thank you. Okay, tonight we're just going to go right into an open forum. First, we'll see if there's any questions here. We are writing a paper that we'll be sending into the court this week, and we will probably read it next week and share it with everyone else. But until then, I think, again, tonight it's a holiday weekend, so we're just going to go into an open forum. Jan, do we have any questions?
Yes, we have some questions. I also have an announcement. Came from a member in Pennsylvania, and it's probably pertinent at this point in time. And it says, we thought that our water filter removed fluoride from our drinking water, and upon further checking, we realized that our water filter did not. In checking, we discovered that a lot of water filters did not remove fluoride. So people may want to check their water filter system to see if it removes fluoride. However, on NLA's homepage, on the right-hand side, where the NLA displays its business partners, there is a link for water treatment and storage, and you got to look carefully. It's in small print on the right side. There's three of them in a row. One of them is water treatment and storage. They look just alike. And that goes to My Patriot Supply website. Now, their Alexa Pure pitcher reduces up to 90% of the fluoride. And according to Alexa Pure's website, in the EnviroTech Laboratories test results, the Alexa Pure Pro water filtration system has a 99.9+ reduction in fluoride. So it basically should take out all the fluoride in your drinking water. That was in addition to the many other contaminants that are removed by this filter. So people may want to check to see what their water filtration system removes and compare it to the Alexa Pure available at the right-hand side of the NLA homepage. Also, there is currently a sale price discount for those items, and there's about, I think, 9 or 10 different sizes and varieties of that Alexa Pure filter there. For me, I've been fortunate. I've lived for all but 6 years of my life in a place where I had either well water or spring water, so I have not been contaminated by chloride, fluoride, and all those other nasty things. Okay, John, here's your first question. Questioner wants to know, could you render an opinion on the best way for America to get back to the common law and get rid of the corrupt court system that we currently have?
Well, the plan and the process that we're going through right now is the only way that I know that we're going to be able to do it. You know, at the front of our page says, of course, that only the people can save America. Only the people can take back the courts. And I don't know of any other way to save America. You know, you can get a good president there, start doing the right thing. We could even get a good Congress coming, you know, here or there and doing the right thing, and a Senate. But look, the nature of those offices are to be corrupted, especially with the corruption we have that's within our nation to this day. The only way to repair all things is to repair our courts of injustice by bringing them back to the courts of justice. And, of course, that is our plan, to create administrations. That's the people, we the people, four people in every county across the nation. There are 3,000, I forget how many counties, 3,000, I think 143 or something like that, counties in the nation. And we need four people for every county. Some counties are a little larger, I mean, especially like down in the city, or any of the cities, but New York City, for instance, quite large, so we'll need more than four per county. So let's say we need about 15,000 people across the nation in order to fulfill these positions. Now, right now, the grand juries and the trial juries are all corrupt. They're all puppet juries. I have not heard or seen of one that isn't corrupt. They're corrupt from the moment that the group of people is just starting to be chosen. The whole system of choosing the jury is corrupt. And once they get the jury together, they make sure that they have a good puppet jury for themselves so that they get the outcome that they would like to get. Doesn't always work out good for them all the time. We've already seen that in the Oregon case, and we've seen that potential out there in Nevada. So sometimes the people see through it. But generally speaking, usually these juries are, again, they're fixed. They're puppet juries. They believe that the code is the law of the land, and the code is not the law. We the people never gave any authority for the legislators to write any code that would control our behavior. Of course, statutes or codes are law for the bureaucrat, for the elected individual. That's the purpose of being able to write statutes. That and to control and make law concerning any thing that we the people gave the legislators the ability to write, for instance, commercial law. They're able to make the necessary codes and so on, or statutes necessary to control that. By the way, everybody should mute their mics because I'm getting some breathing in the background. But anyway, you know, we also, the other problem with the jury, for instance, the grand jury, of course, is, you know, led by a prosecutor. And the prosecutor thinks it's his jury. The prosecutor thinks that he's the one that to bring the charges, and that these people need to just, you know, fulfill his will. And that's why they have this saying out there, which I don't think is very funny, that they could prosecute a ham sandwich. This is a serious problem when it comes to people, you know, going through that process of being coming before the grand jury, or the grand jury hearing things concerning people and getting the indictments on people that should not be indicted. The people will be indicted on breaking statutes or codes, which, again, there is no authority given to the legislature at all. Anywhere can you find it to control the behavior of we the people. the grand jury fails to understand and have the knowledge of jury nullification. Often they'll even come to that point to find out if a jurist what the jurist thinks or knows about jury nullification, and they will not be chosen. So this is a serious problem. Our courts are corrupt. We're in deep trouble. And the only way to fix these courts, of course, is to take back the whole judicial system. The whole judicial system is corrupt. Hopefully there will be a few people here or there within the system that eventually will start doing the right thing and will start getting the pressure upon these people to really get these the cases that we're bringing in, which is subversion against the United States of America, into the courts to be heard. And many, many, many other court cases. But the big thing right now is getting, that critical mass. And we're working towards that critical mass. We've been doing this for quite a few years now, and we've got quite a few people that have become members of National Liberty Alliance, over 6,000. And we have tens of thousands, perhaps maybe even hundreds of thousands, but I know we could say tens of thousands. We easily have tens of thousands of people that visit our website. So we are close to critical mass. We have name recognition. And again, the whole point of National Liberty Alliance is to educate, to assist the people and educate them in the process of the courts and to really create these administrations across the nation. We're also here to get the grassroots movement going with committees of safety. Committees of safety is the process that our founding fathers used in order to create this great nation. And it's been used in the past on a few occasions to save us. And now it's time to bring it up again to save us again. So it is absolutely critical that we get these committees of safety. Everybody should be interested in that, and everybody should go up onto our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. Right on top, there's a drop down a box that says COS on our blue bar. Just click on the COS, which is Committee of Safety, and it'll give you all the instructions and information, everything you need in order for people to start committees of safeties in their county. Every county should have a committee of safety. And they should connect, of course, with the militia. And bring this, the committees of safety, to all the liberty groups within your county. They will join up once they understand the power and the authority that can come through and the plan and the process to come through to bring the power back to the people on the grassroots level, to make that connection back between local government and the people. Because that's what the committees of safety is all about, is to connect the people back into the local government to take control on the local level. And so that's the only way we're going to save America. And ultimately, to keep America, of course, we need those courts of justice. Once we have courts of justice, we can start indicting all these individuals and people who are violating their oaths. We can remove them from office through indictment and put the fear of the people back into them and bring these positions back to people who are not corrupt, but people who really have a desire to do the right thing. Right now, corrupt people are drawn to these positions to be elected, to have power, both power by authority and power by money. And the whole system is corrupt. We're in serious troubles. So anyway, that's the only way America is going to be saved. That's what we are doing here at National Liberty Alliance. And as Thomas Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. They expect what never was and never will be. We must educate ourselves in common law, in the processes of the court, in our history, understanding, what liberty really is, understanding our Constitution. And, of course, we here at National Liberty Alliance, we offer a free course on the Constitution, free course in civics. The course on the Constitution could be done in 6 or 8 hours. We strongly suggest that should be the first course that people should take. The second course is about 120, maybe 130 hours. It's a long course, and you could take your time to go through it. But the bottom line is, when you get through it, you will understand how we got to where we're at and where exactly we are at by taking our civics course. You also understand quite a lot about common law and also our Constitution. So again, that's what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance. And again, educating the people to take control of government from the grassroots level, educating the people to control our government through the process of the jury system, through being able to call themselves together, opening up the grand jury to be available to anybody within the county. That grand jury should be, people should be able to get access to the grand jury. If they wanted to come and talk to the grand jury about a situation, they should have that access. No one should be denied. Let the grand jury decide on whether it's anything they need to act on or not. It's not up to the prosecutor. It's not up to the court system. It's not up to a judge. Nobody made any of these people kings. We, the people, are the authority. We ordained, we established this Constitution for them. So we are above the Constitution. We are above that law. None of us is above the law of God, of course, which is the law of the land, but part of the law of the land is the Constitution. We, the people, are above the Constitution, so we are above that part of the law of the land. But anybody working for us, anybody employed by us, that is, anybody who's elected or employed directly or appointed in our government, they work for us. And they seem to think that they have authority over us and that we have to obey them. We need to turn that back to the way it was. They need to fear the people. You know, when the people fear the government, we have tyranny. And that's where we're at today. And when the government fears the people, we have liberty. And that's where we need to get to tomorrow. So anyway, that's the only way I know to save this nation. I think President Trump is doing a great job. I think he's doing a lot of great things. A lot of people say, hey, why ain't he doing this? Well, he'll get around to it. My goodness, he has so much to do. Even he says, you know, it's really serious. It's more than a swamp. It's a sewer. And that's what he's up against. He's got enemies in his own camp. Even his own party didn't even support him when he ran, and yet he still won. That's amazing. An individual not even supported by his own party, the news media not even supported him, even the right news leader, even Fox, did not support him when he was running for president, and yet he made it. Why? He won on issues. He struck the chord of the people. He understood what the people want, and I believe he understood because he's one of us. And in any event, he's going to do a lot of great things, and I think in 4 years he's going to turn America around, given the opportunity, if we don't run into some kind of crazy thing. And that's why we, the people, need to be getting into the courts. We need to be getting into the grassroots and building these committees of safety. But in any event, I think he's going to accomplish great things in 4 years, and if he does 8 years, it's going to be even more. But nevertheless, no matter how great he can make America, no matter how much he can fix the problems, the disease will still be there. We may have cut off a leg or an arm and repaired it and regrew it, but the disease will return unless we put the king back into the court of justice. And the king of the justice is God himself. God, who is the maker of all law, which is natural law, which we called upon God, of course, in the Declaration of Independence, and we called about God and nature's God and God's law, and that's what we need to establish. You know, the grand jury is the king's bench, and the trial jury is the king's bench. We are there to do the will of the maker, the will of natural law. And if we don't do that, then we're violating everything that is holy, anything that is good. And we'll have to pay for that at some point in time, anybody who violates that. But generally speaking, we need to bring that back into our courts. And if we can succeed there, we can clean up the White House with or without President Trump. But of course, I think it's going to take a great president and the people working together and a few people who have the guts to step up and do the right thing, the guts to take back this country, the guts to tell these new world order people just to go to hell and do what they have to do, and the people rise up together and take care of this business, we can save America. And we could do it quite quickly. But again, we have to hit that critical mass. We've been working for 5 years, I think it's been, to build up what we've got today. to get the membership, to create the website, to get the education up there, to be able to just get enough money to just get by. And believe me, we are hanging by a thread, financially speaking. So let me take this opportunity to ask, if you're not giving $5 a month or more, I wish you'd ask yourself the question, why? Why ain't you doing that? Do you not believe us? Do you think we don't have a great plan? Well, then okay, then don't give us a dime. You know, if you can't believe that we are who we say we are, you can't believe that we have the right plan, then by all means, don't give us your money. Find some other place to go put your money. But if you do believe that we have the plan, if you do believe that we're on the right track, you know, read our papers and you will know who we are. You know, people are known by their words, expression, communications. Just listen to the words. They're either consistent and constant, or they're inconsistent and they contradict the, you know, one part to another. Read our papers and you'll see the consistency. You'll hear the voice of the founding fathers. You'll hear the voice of the United States Supreme Court, at least those who are good on the United States Supreme Court. You'll hear the voice and the words of our maker. That's what you'll hear. Just look for it. You'll see it. And when you see it and you hear it, give us $5 a month or more. Support this endeavor that we, the people here at National Liberty Alliance, are going forward to and for. All right, I think that's about it.
Okay, the writer of that question asked if Brent could answer that as well if he happened to be on the call tonight. I see Brent just checked in.
All right. But okay, what's the question? Brent, by the way, we're just going to have an open forum tonight, so we got the Q&A open. You're welcome to open your mic up and participate on answering any questions. But okay, what's the other question? We can hear you. We can hear you.
Would you like to hear the? Would you like to hear the question, Brent?
Sure.
Okay. It says, could he also render an opinion on the best way for America to get back to the common law and get rid of the corrupt court system that we currently have?
Well, it's my studied opinion that the way this can be done is to do it locally, and it has to be done, the more local, the better. One fella contacted me, odd situation, and he's the pastor of a church. His granddad and his father had both been pastors, and the church is in a rural area, and it started going down. I'm getting to the question here about the importance of localness of these kind of things. Well, at any rate, the denomination, it's a major denomination, they sued. Out of blue, just sued to get the property back. Not to get it back, to sell it. They wanted to sell it. Well, they had to sue him and some of the elders of the church because they wouldn't let them sell the property. They'd lock the doors. Nobody could see it. Well, finally, he said, look, this is not yours. This is ours. And this is a phenomenon all over the United States now. Thousands of rural churches are empty because people have left the land, the rural areas. And because of that, the denominations are coming through and making fortunes, selling property, claiming it's theirs, when it may or may not be. It probably isn't. Well, they challenged them in court. And what they're going to do now is they're going to hold court. The judge doesn't want to hear the case because it's an intra-church squabble over property. These kind of cases have been heard a lot and have gone all the way to the Supreme Court, but judges don't like them, and understandably, it's foolishness, really, to fight over such ridiculous things. And it's obvious in this particular case, trustees of the congregation own the church property. They hold it, hold the title to it, hold legal title. So they're going to hold court, and they're going to impanel the jury, and they're going to give notice to the denomination to be there with their lawyer if they want to participate. They're determined to follow the course of the common law so that when they transcripts of what happens, so when the whole thing goes up to the judge, which it inevitably will, then he'll have something to look at. All the evidence will be gathered. Due process will have been followed. And the jury will deliver the verdict, and if all that's done, and this has happened before this way, by the way, when all that's done, and they're hoping the judge will just say, you fellows are serious, and I'm not going to hear this case. The evidence is in. He's going to ratify it. That's happened before. Now, if he doesn't, they've still made their statement, and they've done their job, and they have to fight it out on another level, they will. But they're going to hold court, and they're going to do it, like Paul says, do it, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, much detail to that. But that's the way to take the country back, is at the local level. Then, of course, we could move to townships. It's my conviction that we ought to have courts. We ought to empanel juries at the township level in our country. Good things start very small. Trying to take it from the top down won't help us. I'm glad that there's force at the top, but that won't help. What has to happen, it has to happen locally, and it has to happen according to the course of the common law. That's why our country began, according to the declaration of our first Congress of 1774. They said, we demand the course of our common law, and most especially, the resolution said, that was sent to the Parliament in England, most especially the inestimable right to trial by jury. And it is true that England denied that in the colonies. They said that the colonies were under our common law. They were under the law of the city, the imperial law, because the colonies were not part of the Kingdom of England. They were part of the empire. Therefore, the common law did not apply. And that's what William Blackstone even said, who we venerate so much in his commentaries in the first volume. So it is important that we say the same thing. Now, things don't change. If you look at it right, the evil empire will try to distract you from the reality, that things do not change. The questions are still the same. The evil empire and its useful idiots and minions of it are doing everything they possibly can to deny trial by jury. People on this call have followed some of them, the Bundy trial. That was all about denying a real trial by jury. Amazingly, it didn't happen. The jury still, being resilient, came through. But it must be done. Number one, of course, Blackstone made this point, and I commend all this to people. Read the first volume of Blackstone. Read 5 pages a day until you've read the whole blasted volume. That would be a good start. But you cannot know what is right, and cannot do what is right until you know what is right. You can't obey what you do not know, and you can't pass it along to anybody else. You cannot impart what you do not possess. What I'm saying is the only remedy to lawlessness, and that's what we're seeing, is law, true law. And the only way to provide true law to other people is to do it yourself. Let's get more fundamental. Political action is not the answer. That's what they want to drag you into, is politics. Politics, polos, the law of the city, the ways of the evil empire. No, we're not called to join them and then fight on their turf. We're called to replace them with the truth. And it starts with somebody, everybody, a critical mass, as was said a while ago, following the laws of nature, the laws of nature of God. I like to say this to people. I say it to you also, anyone that's willing to listen. Why don't we start with, do not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder your neighbor. Do not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder your neighbor. If you can do that, you've gone 99% of the way already. And the power behind something like people committed to doing what God wants them to doing his druthers instead of your druthers, will make all the difference in the world. But key to that, no question, is the jury. Go read 1 Corinthians chapter 6. I'm throwing out ideas. Read 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And if you can, get a copy of the little handbook by yours truly called The Jury and the Juror. You can get it on Amazon.com. It's only about 100 pages. And it recounts the history of the jury, from whence it came and its purpose, and how it works and the duty of the juror, the jury. It's also at www.commonlawyer.com. Take that, look at it, read it. It has a long section in there out of that 100 pages on 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, unpacking those verses, the things that I think is important. And I believe, of course, the whole thing's important, and there's always more that can be said, but I tried to say something about it. Look at it yourself. And after you read those sections of that book, tell me what you think. Email me. But in the meantime, it's a local matter. All politics, said that left-wing Irish congressman, Tip O'Neill, all politics is local. He's right. But the truth is, all government is local. and government, beginning with you and your house, not the State House, not the White House, not even the courthouse. If you can't get it right at home, what good is it going to be at the courthouse? It must be a personal conviction inside of your soul, a personal conviction to do the druthers of God instead of your druthers. Back to you. Is it Gerard? Who's handling the board there?
Yeah, I'm on it tonight, Brent. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Appreciate the comments and amen. And let me just build a little more, and I might repeat myself a little bit, but amen to what Brent has said. You know, you can go to our website, and on the top of our website, if you go to education and highlight education, you'll see books there. Click on books. You'll see, if you highlight books, you'll see some other books that'll jump up. There's about, I don't know, six or eight. But if you click on books, you'll find a lot more books. And in there, you'll find Blackstone's Volume 1 and 2. I was just looking at this, and I realized we don't have a copy of the Bible. I know of a good Bible that people can download, and they can put right on their computer, and you know, and it's nice to be able to go through your Bible, you know, with keywords to, you know, find different scriptures. But we'll get the Bible up there. I'll try to remember to do that tomorrow or something. But again, we do have the Blackstone Volume 1 and Volume 2 up there for anybody interested in reading. And we've got a lot of other things up there. We've got tremendous amounts of books. And again, you know, we got Brent Winter's book. Well, we don't have it, but you can get Brent Winter's book, which is The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters, and you can go to his website, I'm sure, to get a link to it, and we may have a link on our website to that, but anyway, it's commonlawyer.com. Now, you know, I agree 100% with Brent has said, and I think we pretty much reiterated some of what he has said prior to him speaking, and I just want to touch the key points here. Everything is local. If you control your local government, you control the whole government. Federal government is nothing without local government. Local government is the muscle of the federal or the higher end government, the federal government. And if we can get rid of corruption on a local level, we will get rid of corruption on the upper level, and that's when we take our courthouses back. But nevertheless, committees of safety is the key point, and that's what we're doing. We're trying to encourage everyone. We don't want to control committees of safety. We just want to teach people how to create a committee of safety. So anybody, you can go to our link. Just go to COS, click on that. You could do a search up there to see if you have a committee of safety in your county, and it'll give you all the information on that committee of safety within your county, you know, how you can join up with those people that have already started. Of course, if you don't find one in your county, then this is going to teach you how to create one. Then people should start one. Get together, two or three people, come together and start one. Get a committee of safety going. And a committee of safety is all about the grassroots people connecting to local government. And we've laid out a plan on exactly how to do it, where to start. You know, you start with your sheriff. Start getting a relationship with him, educating him. You know, I'm planning on writing a book very specifically for the sheriff. It's hard to find the time, but I'm going to try to start squeezing in an hour here and an hour there to try to get a book out for sheriffs, where you can actually give the sheriffs a book so for them to really understand who we are as a people, where we've come from, and what law is, and go back to the beginning, you know, and get back to the very beginning, the roots of where law is, and give them an understanding. You know, people think that they need law from the standpoint, and they do need law, but they think that government's got to give them the law. No, we've already got the law. It's the natural law. It's the law of the people. It's the law of the land. It's already there. It has nothing to do with government creating any of that. This is what God has created. This is what his rules. This is what the power and the authority of the people have created, rules and law to run our government. Because that's what the Constitution is all about. The Constitution is us ordaining and establishing certain things, a legislative body, you know, a judicial body, an administrative body, and setting off the rules and giving out the power and the authority. And they cannot go beyond that. And then we came out with the Bill of Prohibition or the Bill of Rights, which says, okay, now, whatever you do in any of those rules and any of those things that we've given you, you do not violate any of these points that are unalienable rights protected by the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, you know, whether it be the First Amendment, Second Amendment, or so on. But look, it's got to start on the local level. And people need to get educated on how to start that. We all need to be on the same page. And that's why we put together a program, a process, an idea. And people can change that around and do whatever they please. After all, it's up to the people on the grassroots level to do what they have to do. But once you get educated in these things, particularly on how to get a committee of safety together, and you should get educated on the common law to understand what your expectations are of your local government. And they need to understand what the authority is and how they need to be working with the people. After all, those people are your neighbors. They live right with you. But anyway, that's where it's got to get going. And again, National Liberty Alliance is not a top-down organization. It may appear so because we are instructing and teaching, but really that's what we are, is really a facilitator of knowledge, a facilitator for advice, a facilitator of information and knowledge, and also a place to help people to collect together, not only on the local level, but county to county, state to state. You know, the grand jury, the only one sitting grand jury that we the people have put together through, the National Liberty Alliance, which we call the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And the only purpose of that grand jury is only one purpose, not to sit and rule forever, because we don't want to rule anything. What we want to do is bring justice back into the courts. So we the people have come together from every single state of this union, all across America, every single state, to come together from time to time to consider an indictment and to write papers and file it into the court, informations revealing the subversion, revealing the injustice in our courts, revealing the enemy, revealing the evil within our government, okay, and going after these people as subverters. And that's what we're about. And the moment we can get to the point where we can take our courts back, And it's got to be done on a federal level. We have really researched this out. We've tried working on the local levels and trying, state by state. It's almost an impossible task. It'll take 100 years to go through it, and people don't have the patience, unfortunately, to go through that process. But by the time 100 years come by, we'll be done, gone, because of the way the status of our nation at this point in time. But look at what we've got to do in the federal courts could be literally done almost overnight. Not literally speaking, but figuratively speaking, in months. All we have to do is start to get some of the paperwork responded to that we are piling in the court up today here in New York. And this is a national problem. And we are dealing with corruption at every single level and every single state and every single county. And we're filing papers accordingly. But our only purpose is to deal with the subversion against the United States of America, subversion against we the people, subversion against the Constitution, subversion against God, ultimately, the rebellion against God. And what we need to do is, again, we're looking to bring administrators. What is an administrator? 4 administrators in every county, a paid position. Someone has to be paid. It's a full-time job to bring juries together and to impanel them and bring them together from the standpoint of orientating them as to the common law, preparing them for the job that they're about to enter into, maybe a week as a grand jury, maybe a week or a couple of weeks, or maybe just a few days as a trial jurist, okay? And so we have to get it at that level and have an untainted jury, and that is our job. That's the job of the people, to make sure we have an educated jury that is untainted, free in mind to be able to decide what needs to be done. And not only whether the law has been broken or not, but also what needs to be done to restore that individual. That's the people's job. That's not the job of some judge. The judge is the administrator of the court. No judge belongs in the court. When clearly the United States Supreme Court has made this point numerous times, and I believe it's also in statutes, that every single judge is a magistrate. He sits as a judge, as a jurist, okay, in trials that usually contract trials, okay, equity courts. That's where they sit. where the people come together and say, okay, I'll take one judge, one guy to make a decision. And if we have honest people, we have no problem trusting that, because truth is pretty easy to see. And then they have the appellate system, that you can go through should that judge make a mistake. If he's corrupt, you should be able to see it on its face and go after that individual for fraud in a court. Okay? Now you can overturn him with a writ of error. You can have him thrown off the bench of hearing anything in that court and bring in another judge. The people have the power and the authority. It is our court. And I watch TV, and there's a program I was watching recently, and this one judge, there was a lot of parts with his judges in his courtroom and stuff, and he calls it his court. You don't do this in my court. No, it's not his court. This is God's court. This is the court of the land. This belongs to the people, and God is the king of that court. And when people start talking about courts being my court, we have a problem. And these judges rule in their courts because they believe it is their courts. We need to turn that around. We need to start jailing judges. We need to get rid of these people. Re-educate them if it's possible. But look it, people need to understand the basic, they have to be orientated in order to be a jurist. And they have to be assisted. If they need assistance, they have to be able to call someone and talk to someone. And that's the people's job, not the judge's job. Because the judge will always say, well, look at you, you got to follow the law. The law is what I say it is. And if A, B, and C happens, you must find them guilty. No, you can even know for a fact the person is guilty, and you may decide mercy as a group and say, no, we're going to give this guy mercy. For whatever reason, I don't know. Nobody knows what really took place, what takes place in a case, except for the people who are sitting there listening. And more often than not, juries are removed from the room so they can have their private conversations, which is doing nothing but destroy the case of those people who are trying to defend themselves. I've seen cases coming up where there are tremendous amounts of evidence, tremendous. Take the Bundy case, tremendous amounts of evidence. Take the case out there in Oregon, tremendous amounts of information, tremendous amounts of evidence, amounts of people able to come up and bear witness. And they spent their time day after day, week after week, month after month, preparing this case to eliminate, to remove, to reject, to deny, to hide, to cover up all that evidence. Trying to get the jury. But the jury, by God's mercy, was able to see through all that. Okay, so it's pretty hard to hide truth. That's why the jury system is the best system. You get 12 people coming together, listening intently to what's going on, they can figure things out pretty darn good. And it's the best system we have, but I trust that system. And justice is not putting people in jail. Justice is restoring the damaged, the injured party. That's what justice is. And that's what we got to get back to. People don't understand that. We have to educate people. We have to educate our sheriffs. And again, it gets back to the grassroots. That's where we, the people, this is what National Liberty Alliance is working day in and day out, week in and week out, month in and month out, year in and year out. We've been here for years working on this, trying to educate the people, to give them all the necessary tools that they would need in order to establish justice in their neighborhood, to bring back control to the people in their neighborhood. All they have to do is come up and learn, become educated, and use the tools. We didn't even create the tools. We ourselves found the tools and are putting it out on the paper for you to have right here on the website. It's all about education. So the people, once we broke through the veil of injustice, that's when we start to be heard in court, there is going to be a flood across this nation of administrators, people being prepared right here through National Liberty Alliance. We've got about 1,000 people. I forget what the number is. I know it's a little over 1,000. We have 1,000 people who have decided to become administrators. We need 15 times that number. Okay, and these people are preparing themselves to become the administrators for the juries, the grand juries and the trial juries. And once we break through and we start to get the convictions and we start to go after these people in high places and start putting them in jail, the jails that they built for us will put them into them. There's a story in the Bible, I can't think of the name of the individual, Brent may remember, where he built the gallows for his enemy and the king put him on it. He was building his own gallows. But in any event, look it. We need to take this nation back, and we can only do it on the grassroots. We are doing everything we can at National Liberty Alliance in order to accomplish that goal. We need your support. We need your financial support. A lousy $5 a month from everybody, and we would have more than enough money to do anything we want. Okay, that's a tremendous amount of money if we were to get $5 a month from everybody. We get $5 a month from a handful of people. We need your financial, and if you can afford 10 or 20, come on, give us 10 or 20. Some people have given us 50 and 100, you know, not many, just a few. And if you can afford that, then you need to be doing that. Or find some other place to put your money to save America and let us know about it, because I'd like to know if there's another place. Maybe we can connect with them in partnership with them. People are doing something that can save America. But, you know, we need your support there. And we need the support of ourselves on the grassroots level. The people in my county know the problems of our government within our county, within our townships. Okay? You know, in my, I got to think if I can remember this, but I think it is, we got 19 towns in my county and two cities. 19 towns and two cities, okay? We know what's going on in our towns and our cities. I may not go know what's going on two, three towns from now, you know, away from me. But bringing the liberty groups together, which we would bring together in order to get into the committees of safety, okay, we'll have a couple of people from this town, a few people from that town, a couple of people from this city. And collectively together, we all have the same sheriff. It's county sheriff. That's why it's done on a county level. And we work the problems. We go to town, city to city. We explain all this on our papers on how to create a COS, how to run it, how to get control of your government on a local level. People need to do it. We have all these liberty groups that have been out there for years now. I've been involved in a liberty group since 1999, or maybe it was 2000, beginning of 2000. But that's how long I've been in the liberty groups. And nobody's really working to take the town, to take the control of the local government back. I know a lot of liberty groups try to. They have these town meetings that go here, but they speak with no authority, and they get thrown out, laughed at, ignored, whatever. Once in a while, you get a town that does listen and you're able to do something. But generally speaking, they get nothing done. They get involved in the political process. They get somebody who comes up from among their ranks saying, hey, I want to be the Liberty Group, people. I want to be elected by the people, and I'm going to do the good thing, and I'm going to support you. Once they get to Washington or Albany or whatever your capital is, all of a sudden they forget about you. They may remember you at voting time. Okay, or they may do a few little things, but they never get together to really make any change at all. Maybe because they can't, but generally speaking, most of them come corrupt. I know congressmen that have become corrupt. They don't even know they're corrupt. Well, they were great in the beginning. We supported them, and they were great. You know, I've heard it said, and I don't know who said this originally, you know, but the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different results, okay? And that's what the liberty groups have been doing for years now, years and years. Bring to them the committees of safety. Let them see and understand the real power that the people can have at the local level. Let them understand the history of this and how our founding fathers created this whole process and brought America together. Got together and created what we have today, the United States of America. But this is where it's got to be. It's got to be on a local level. And it cannot be controlled by an upper level. National Liberty Alliance will always be here for only a couple of reasons at some point. And it's what we're here for now anyway, right at this point. That is to educate, provide a place for people to gather together to do things, to educate and to facilitate a place for gathering, a place, and give the people all the necessary tools, which is education, in order to accomplish the goals. You know, you can't support liberty if you don't understand it. And I'll tell you what, before I really took my first course, what was his name, Bodnarik, was the first course in the Constitution that I ever took. And I never really understood liberty. And even after that course, I still didn't really understand it. But it was the beginning of realizing liberty is a lot more than just being free to be able to put on brown shoes or black shoes or go down to the local store or go someplace. It's a lot more than that. But that's what people think liberty is. They think it's freedom, free movement, or freedom to do whatever it is you please to do. No, liberty is much, much more than that. And you need to become educated. You know, great men gave a lot of thought to try to define what liberty is. And I think they've done a great job. We've got the Bible, which will define liberty. You want to know liberty, go read your Bible. But again, look at, you need to support us, not only with your money, okay? And again, $5 a month. I don't care if you're making $10,000 a week. Give us $5 a month. You can afford $5 a month. Or if you're making $500 or $800 a week, I don't know. You can afford $5 a month. But not only that, give us your time. And we want your time really more on the grassroots level than we do on a national level. But we have committees that are national committees, but they all have a purpose to work with the grassroots level. So join on, become a county organizer, become a state organizer, become an administrator, even, you know, become a national leader. We have, I forget how many national leaders we have at the moment, 12, 13, I don't know, maybe Jan can tell us. But, you know, we have to have leaders in order to help get these things going. And we have a welcoming committee, you know, we have a court oh goodness! What do we call the court committee? The
courtroom observers.
Courtroom observers. Thank you. Courtroom observers committee. And everybody should be attent to the alert that goes out in the email, whether you belong to that committee or not. If you hear that there's a court case happening in your county, and you can get away from work or whatever, and be able to get into that courtroom to write an affidavit to help that individual get justice, then you should do it. It's your duty. You have to, you know these things, and once you know these things, it's your duty. And what was you if you don't do it? What was you if you don't help your neighbor, assist your neighbor? And when you need the help, maybe it's not going to be there for you because you failed to help them, and maybe that's your penance now. Maybe that's your punishment. You're not going to get help in your time of need. But you need to help people. So you need to become active, and if you don't, you know, get active in the committees of safety in your local level. If you can get active on a national level, give us an hour a week or an hour here and there or whatever, or a couple hours a week. If you're retired and you need something to do, we've got a lot of work we can give to you, enjoyable work, work that is working towards the saving of this nation. So participate and put your money where your mouth is. If you believe in what we are doing, you know, get out there and give us that $5 a month or more and support us, because God knows that we need that money. Every month, we are scraping the bottom of the barrel, just barely getting through. I'm telling you, I can't tell you how many times we come to the week and the bills are due and ready to be shut off, and then all of a sudden something comes here and something comes there, and finally we're able to just pay the bills, and now we're already working on the next month. Sometimes it's almost the end of the month by the time we finally finish being able to pay the bills of the month before, and now the next month is upon us, a week or two away, and we're struggling all over again. With our membership and with what we're doing, we shouldn't have to be struggling like that. We should be able to get that financial stability where we can pay attention and focus in on the things that we have to do to save this nation, which we do anyway. But there is stress on some of us when it comes to not being able to pay the bills to keep the lights on. It's been very close where the website almost shut down. Believe me when I tell you that. Very close. Numerous times. Okay? Matter of fact, we were shut off one time for about, I don't know, half a day or a day because we couldn't pay the bill. And all of a sudden we got a few bucks and able to pay it. But either save America because it's worth it, or you figure it out what you're going to tell your children when you're slaves and the boot of tyranny is on your head. Anyway, what else? Any other questions there, Jan?
Thank you for reminding me of one thing, John. There is another announcement I forgot to make, and I'm happy to make it. We have two new national coordinators this week. We have Ollie Smith from Colorado as the national coordinator for news, and we have Terry Moore, also from Colorado, as national coordinator for ham radio and other things. So I'm pleased to make that announcement. Then I have one question. Yep. During several of the Monday night calls, and you mentioned it again tonight, you have mentioned giving an olive branch to the judges and so forth. What exactly do you mean when you say that?
Well, look, if we see what these judges are doing, as soon as we move into their courtroom, we kind of look into their background. We see what they're doing in our case. We see how they're violating the law, ignoring justice, ignoring the Constitution, not keeping their oaths, all these things. We see it clearly. But every time we write a paper, we write the paper in a way that we offer that olive branch, that we're not going to chase you on any of these things. Just do the right thing from this point forward. That's all. We're not going to chase you on the violations you have up to this point. If all of a sudden you came to your senses and you realize, wow, I need to be getting, I'm on the wrong side. I got to do something else. I've had a love for money and power, and it's destroying me, and I see I'm heading for jail or whatever the case may be, or God's going to be, you know, I'm heading for hell, you know. And whatever it is that turns them around, we're willing to accept them and work with us. If they're willing to work with us, we're willing to ignore those things, because that, if we're going to put them all in jail at breaking the law, we got to put every single judge in America, and I'm not exaggerating at this point. I am not exaggerating at all. Every single judge in America belongs in jail. They're all part of the game. Every single one of them is violating and being silent, not saying, they should be stepping up and saying, look what this judge is doing. That's breaking the law, the fact that they're not going after the judges alongside them that are violating the Constitution. They are required by law. Anybody who is subverting the Constitution, subverting the United States of America, they are required by law to report or do something immediately, bring it to the attention of the president or some judge. And if they are a judge, they need to do something about it. But they're not. So if we're going to put them all in jail, we're going to put every single judge in America and practically every single elected individual in America in jail. And that's ridiculous. We can't possibly do that. We've lost our way. They've lost their way. We need to realize that we have to give them, you know, the olive branch. We have to give them that opportunity to repent, to change. To change. Repent means to change direction. You're heading this way, it means to turn around and go the other way. Go the right way, okay? That's what repenting is. Repenting isn't feeling bad and saying, I'm sorry. Yeah, that may be a part of it, but it has nothing to do with the real repentance. Repentance is stopping the evil that you're doing and starting to do the opposite thing, which is the good that you should be doing in opposition to the evil of what you were doing. That's repentance, turning away from your sins, turning away from the evil that you are doing and exercising, turning away from the power and the authority that you are violating. Turning away for the lust of the money that you are receiving and getting, the good life that you think. You know, you may be given a good life in this world, but we'll see what happens in the world to come. God have mercy on your soul. And mine too, by the way. But anyway, you know, this is what we need to do, and we have to give that olive branch. Now, that doesn't mean they're free of all things. When we get things together, and we start to get courts of justice again where people can get access to the grand jury, I'm sure in the beginning we're going to be flooded with people. I want to tell you what Judge Joe, Judge Mary, this guy done, that guy done. And I, you know, I've been injured. And you know what? They're going to have to pay the till. They're going to have to pay for that. And again, we're interested in restoring the people. And so most of it is financial that they're going to have to pay back. I don't think any judge has enough money to pay back all the evil that they have caused and all the injury that they have caused. I don't think it's even possible. You know, every time they run a court case and the court case benefits the state, but the victim always just gets thrown out in the street after they use them to get the case, to get the conviction and get everything and the fines and the money made in the prison and all the things that come along with that. A lot of money to be made there, by the way. And they're getting all the money, but the victim at the end is sitting out in the streets with nothing, injured. Nothing. And so, you know, what are we going to do about that? Well, look at that. That has to be taken care of. And again, you know, however the people on the local level deal with that problem, with these individuals that we've given, you know, a pass on, so to speak, you know, an olive branch, do good now and work with us. We're not going to chase you for the evil we already see you doing. There are certain things we can't deny on that, but, you know, murder or something like that, I don't think we can pass on that one. But generally speaking, but again, the people on the local level, they're the ones who are injured, and they'll be stepping up, and a lot of cases will happen, and a lot of these judges will be running and hiding under rocks, leaving the country even, or whatever it is that they're going to do to escape justice. But anyway, Hopefully that answers the question, Jan.
That's all of the questions I have for tonight.
Okay. By the way, is Gerard here tonight?
I haven't seen him. Let me look quick.
Gerard, if you're here, pipe in. Let's move over to our Q&A. Brent, I don't know if you heard, I mentioned earlier, we're just going to go right into Q&A tonight. And you've got an open mic yourself, so if you want to respond and pipe in on any of the questions, you're welcome to do that. And, of course, if any questions are directly to you, just open your mic and speak up. Okay. So I'm going to take our first individual. Let's see. Let's look on the next. Looks like Ali from Colorado. Is that who popped in there? Oh, no.
Right.
That didn't happen. Did I? Okay. Ali, go right ahead. Has he been unmuted?
Looks like it.
Okay. Brent, are you in as a host or are you in just an, or did Jan open your mic?
I had Jan open my mic.
Okay, so I'll leave you there. But let's see if we can't get, let me see if I can get Ali. Good, Ali, you got the mic.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, there's some heavy breathing in there. I can't even hear myself talk.
All right, anybody who's not muted, please mute yourself. Go ahead, Brent. Ali.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to tell a quick story, but I've got a comment. I met a kid out there in Vegas, and he kept having run-ins with the cops. Okay, here last week he had a thread on Facebook where he's all anti-cop and this and that. Well, regressing back in the early 60s, I was a seaman out of Norfolk, making, $75 a month. I got involved with the wrong people, okay? I hauled two or three carloads of cigarettes out of the Winston-Salem area up into Virginia at $500 a trip, okay? And I learned about organized crime from direct experience. In fact, I for a long time, I'd go into bars and I'd get a pack of cigarettes. If you could squeeze that pack of cigarettes all the way down and they'd pop right back up, chances are they wouldn't have a tax stamp on them. Plus, I've been in Chicago and Kansas City. But here's the thing. Let's talk about that situation out in Salt Lake. Okay, that situation went national real quick. Okay, but here's the thing. That is a local issue. As far as the NLA is concerned, we should be contacting the county organizer or the state director and get boots on the ground and work with them, give them support. However, like I say, that is a local issue. Brent's talk reminded me of that. People from all over want to get involved with that, but however, that the people in that county and the NLA should get involved with the county organizer and start working on these hot problems, strike while the iron's hot, okay, and actually give them the resources of the NLA, and if need be, have some people that familiar with how to talk to the sheriffs and whatever, work with these county organizers. You start solving problems, you start getting them involved, they start calling people on the register, NLA register in that county, you get a group of people going, and next thing you know, you see, those counties are a hotbed for COS, for committees of safety. But you get them working on something like this, a real hot issue, and chances are there'll be more people in that county that want to get involved, and next thing you know, you've got a committee of safety. I yield.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. Thank you, Ali. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. Thanks. All right, let's go to our next caller. Let's see, is it Larkin? Go right ahead, Larkin.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. This is Allie in Washington. This has been a very, very inspirational conversation I've been listening to, and it's caused me to put on 4 of the hats that I wear. They would be first being here on this call with the NLA and also on the Courtroom Observer Committee as Vice President for Washington Action for Safe Water, where we advocate for fluoride-free public water, and for being a seed, excuse me, in one of the 3 seed groups for the Empower movement that we are doing here in Seattle and nationwide. And fourth, an update on Generation Zapped and how the last 2 are kind of connected and with your situation with money. And so my question is, can I give you as brief as an update as I can give you on this and what we are doing here in Seattle and in the United States on these things?
Yeah, go right ahead, Allie.
Well,
go ahead, Allie.
You know, with the fluoride, that was the, you know, after the NLA had, being on this call, after the comments that I heard about fluoride and filters, as far as I know, only reverse osmosis will get the fluoride out. But there is a group in India that has just announced that they have a low-cost method to remove fluoride from drinking water with a specially made tea bag, like pouches, that has been developed by a team of Indian researchers. So I don't know anything more about that, but I'm certainly going to be looking further into that for simple fluoride removal from water. And I've been involved in this since 2006, and I know what it is like.
Allie, yeah? Let me make just a comment while you're just at that point concerning the fluoride. You know, one of the things that came to my thinking, my realization as you were talking, you know, the committees of safety, once you establish a relationship with all of the towns, the sheriff, of course, first, all of the towns and cities within your county, and you and the people are working closely with the government, not to tell them what to do, but to assist them to what's in the minds and the hearts of the people, and also making sure that nobody is violating their constitutional, you know, their oath. And
yes, and I can give you a very good example of that.
Hold on a second.
Because I was as a courtroom observer for the NLA in a courtroom, not once, but twice, with my video camera, I was challenged.
Yeah, Allie,
and I was allowed.
I'm going to have to mute you just for a second. Allie, hang on a second. I just wanted to finish my point. My point is once you establish a relationship, if you have fluoride in your water, whatever towns might have town water or city water, you know, and you got fluoride in your water, once you establish that relationship, now it's a time to educate them on the problems with fluoride and to get it out. They certainly don't need fluoride in the water. So that is another thing that people can do through the committees of safety. But with that, go right ahead, Allie. You got your mic back. Go right ahead again.
Okay, well, we have tried all of that. We have been denied Washington Action for Safe Water by our Seattle City Council, Seattle Public Utilities. In fact, they've taken us out of a public arena and put us back in a room where we were not a public record recorded or anything like that to answer our 7 questions. You know, I've seen 15 petitions denied from the Department of Health by a dentist. I've seen 2 requests to have the fluoride classified as an approved drug as they put it in the water to treat a condition. Denied. Well, the reason they denied it is because they can't approve it because the EPA has classified it as a hazardous product.
Right.
So they have just totally, in all these arenas, since I've been involved in this, in 2006 in Seattle because they are the largest distributor of fluoridated water in the state of Washington, as they sell water to 18 other water districts. Now, remember, I was an elected official. I was a water commissioner for 12 years. Mm-hmm. So I am to the point where number three hat.
Well, let me make another point again, and my point is going to be the same point, but maybe give it a little more of a perspective on it. If people are successful in creating a committee of safety in their county, a large enough committee of safety, an active enough committee of safety, and we're not talking thousands of people, we might be talking 100 people or so, but when you create a committee of safety that's got an arm in what they're doing, and the sheriff is on board and coming to the meetings, or at least sending his deputies to the meetings, and you've educated the sheriff into the Constitution, and you're sending him someplace to get educated, like at National Liberty Alliance, and you're starting to establish a relationship with all of the town boards and the city boards or whatever, however they run things, okay, the mayor and so on. When you establish that relationship, and there is a sense of respect and control by the people of their government, where finally local government is listening to the people, it can be achieved by through the process that we are offering, that our founding fathers used in order to create the nation. We can use it to save the nation. And if we can establish that relationship on that level, then at that point, you will have the clout and the ability for these people to sit down and actually listen and look at what the real professionals are saying concerning what's up with fluoride and what the purpose originally was for, in order to get them to stop that. What you know what? And if you have a grand jury operating in that that has been orientated by the administrators who are the people themselves, who take an oath to come in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and to free the people so that they can sit on the grand jury or sit on a trial jury. Well, if they refuse to do it, after all, there are injuries taking place. Fluoride is injuring people. It's killing people. It's destroying us. And that, along with many other things. Well, then you can start to get some indictments in here, these people who refuse to stop injuring the people. You see, so the people can take control. There is a plan. We can execute it. It's there. But you have to execute it on your local level. You have to get involved in your local committee of safety. And if there isn't one, you need to create it. Get together with one or two or three other people, discuss it and plan it and execute it. And start the relationship on your local level. Take control of your country. Take control of your nation by taking control of local government. And take control, bring justice back into our courts by working with the administrators. Because the administrators, look at the administrators working in the courts and the Committee of Safety and the militia. They're all the people working together. Can accomplish anything in their county, and county to county, and state to state, until we get it across the United States. All right, Allie, go back to you again.
Well, yes, and I wish you would give me the time to continue my report, because I will be addressing a lot of the things that you are talking about, and it is so important, the things that you are talking about, because of the things that I am doing under my number three and my fourth hats that I am wearing. And, in addition to Seattle being the biggest distributor of fluoridated water, they are also the biggest distributor of the smart meters. And they've just announced, even after what we've been doing, that they're going to be rolling out 420,000 of them. And I was part of one of three C groups. One is here in Seattle, one is in Kelowna, B.C., and one is in the state of Michigan, in Detroit. And we began filing notices of liability. It just got to the point where we have been so denied and so shut down, going through everything that we could, that with Josh DeSole, we started with Take Back Your Power. We're now doing the Empower movement. Now, and this is really important, too, because what we're doing right now is we're having a Kickstarter, and that came about because I also did a Kickstarter a year ago with a gal, Sabine El-Jamal, who put together a documentary, Generation Zapped. all about our kids in school in the Wi-Fi. And we did a Kickstarter on that to raise $35,000. We ended up with over $50,000. Well, we're now doing a Kickstarter with the InPower movement because the documents that we've been using in this process, excuse me, I had put some dinner in the oven, and I just got to slip it out here before it burns. Sorry about that. Well, we have given them, like, fluoride. All the documents, all been dismissed. So we're going through the justice system there. We joined with Fluoride Action Network, a whole list of people that were signers, Fluoride Action Network, Food and Water Watch, Organic Consumers Association, American Academy of Environmental Medicine, Internal Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, Moms Against Fluoridation, Washington Action for Safe Water. And we sent a petition to the EPA calling the agency to ban the addition of fluoridation chemicals to public water supplies due to the risk of these chemicals posed to the brain. And with their Toxic Substance Control Act, that authorizes the EPA to prohibit the particular use of a chemical that presents an unreasonable risk to general public or susceptible subpopulations. The TSCA gives EPA the authority to prohibit drinking water additives. Well, we attached over 2,500 pages of scientific documentation. And you know what the EPA did in Washington, D.C.? Same thing the Seattle City Council did. They denied us and dismissed us. Well, okay, next step.
Allie,
wait a minute, can I finish? Would you please let me finish?
Yeah,
I want to give you the next step of where we're at.
I just want to ask you, though, if you can get me a copy of those 2,500 pages. Is there something you can get me in electronic?
Go to fluoridealert.org. It is all available there. This is the greatest encyclopedia worldwide. What I'm going to tell you now is about the lawsuit. Since the EPA in D.C. denied and dismissed us, we have now filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court in Northern California against the EPA. So lawsuits have begun there. And I find that very interesting because now if we go back to the NOL, which got kicked off because of the smart meters, once we achieve getting the stop meters stopped, we've been joined by Dr. McCullough, and we've also been joined by Robert F. Kennedy. And once the smart meters are stopped, we're going to go on to vaccinations. But there's a group of us here in the state of Washington, we're going to go on here with notices of liabilities. We're sick and tired of showing them the scientific information, the documents. Been doing this since 2006. Smart meters since probably 2010. Now we're telling them, you are causing us harm. We have given you the evidence. You are now liable. Well, on September 29th, we get into our final document filing, and we're going to file the liens against all of those people that are responsible for rolling out the smart meters in Seattle. So that's why we need the NLA behind us, too. That's why I wear the four hats, because I don't know where this is going to take us. But what we are doing with this InPower movement, and you can go to InPowerMovement.com, and we are sharing all of these documents online so people can learn how to do this. We're tired of trying to be nice to them, have them listen to us, be their friends. They're not our friends. They're there to collect their paycheck, their health care, and their lifestyle. And they're going to deny us because they don't want their little world upset. and they're being paid off, and they're also being bribed and threatened. So we're just tired of all of this, and we're just now serving them with papers through the justice system that they're liable. They all need to go to jail, like you said.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you, Allie.
And with the Generation Zapped, working with Sabine El-Jamal, because when I first started investigating the impact that smart meters and cell towers would and could have on water and sewer districts, I learned about Wi-Fi in the schools. And in my path going down that road, I became acquainted with Sabine, who was putting together a documentary, Generation Zapped, about the children in our schools. I also got Curtis Bennett from Canada, because I couldn't reply to the Board of Health or the Department of Health. I've been there as an elected official and on fluoride. I couldn't go there and echo his words on Wi-Fi in the school when they were accepting statements on Wi-Fi in the school. And he responded. And his response has gone viral, and he refers to an elected official in Washington State who cared enough. Well, they never responded to that, but boy, they were all over his websites the next day with WA.gov. So it's interesting how... Well, I'm just getting overwhelmed here with all of these hats that I wear and where we're going. But with Sabine, the documentary is now finished.
Well, what we the people
new need to trailer do... will be released on Labor Day this weekend, and next month the documentary is available. And I'm going to be doing a local fundraiser here to raise money to bring Sabine here and set up screenings. And especially work in our school districts on Generation Zapped and Wi-Fi in the schools.
All right, Allie, let me ask you a couple questions here. You know, first of all, you ended with the idea that there's a documentary involved here, so I guess that's going to be going up on YouTube. Is that something, some kind of a video that's going to be an hour or two long or something? What exactly is that?
I know there will be a trailer for it. I'm waiting now because for a telephone call for the woman that is working for Sabine in setting up screenings throughout the U.S.
Were they going to put it on YouTube?
I can't answer that right now.
Okay,
there will
out.
Be a trailer.
Let me ask you.
Go to Generation Zapped, and you will just search that, and you'll find out all about it.
Generation Zapped.
Zapped.
Z-A-P-P-E-D? Zapped, E-D?
Z-A-P-P-E-D. That E-D. Means they are under criminal assault by radiation.
Okay, now listen, I'm going to look into that to see. You know, certainly I hope they're doing this for free, and they're going to put this video out available that we can get it and put it up on our website and maybe even also put it on our YouTube and so on, but we want to get that information out. If they're going to sell it, then that becomes a problem. You know, when we became when we first got together to put together National Liberty Alliance, we knew we needed funding somehow, and we thought about maybe charging for membership. We thought about maybe charging for the courses we've given, but they never really ended up that way because we realized that some people don't have the money and people, you know, get them to give $5 sometimes is tough. And maybe life is that tough for them that they can't give it. But everybody needs to know about this stuff, so it's got to be free. And that's why on National Liberty Alliance, everything that we offer
well,
is
yeah,
free.
Well, yeah, you
hold
know,
on,
a lot
on,
of us.
On,
I mean, I'm scratched with all these hats, and it's been a while since I sent you guys six.
All right, Allie, I'm sorry I had to mute you because I wanted to finish off. This has got to be a dialogue here, and I want to continue because there's more information I want to get from you. But anyway, look, we need to have this stuff free as possible. Again, we realize that we have to give this information free. Freely we have received, freely we give. So everything we do is free here, with the exception, and this is where you cut me off, of the jurisdictionary. We don't have control on that. If we would have written and put together, had the ability to do it, but this is what we learned from was jurisdictionary. If we would have did jurisdictionary and put it together, believe me, it would be for free. But I do understand the individual who's a lawyer. He's got a business going. He's making money. And the money they charge for this is well worth it. It's well worth it. I think it's $275 for the course. But if you want to learn how to get into the courts and how the process works and how to write papers and how it's structured, you want to take that course. But we are reselling his program, which means you're going to get it for the same price he sells it off his site, just that he gives us a little bit of a commission. So we send people there, and that helps to assist us, you know, as far as supporting us. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, and I'll go out to see what I can find, Generation Gizapt, I think it's called. I'm not sure whether it's .com or what, but when I unmute you, you can tell me. But the other thing I wanted to ask you is I went out to fluoridealert.org, and I was clicking on the links looking, and I didn't see any place where they gave all of the documents. Do you have a direct link to that on where I can get that information? And I don't see her, Jan, to unmute her. Do you know, can you find her to unmute her? I don't see her up there. All right, well, while he's looking to unmute her, I don't know if anybody else has gone out to Fluoride Alert. Okay, Allie, go right ahead. You're unmuted now. Listen, when I talk back, let's get a conversation going here, because if you want to, you know, tell us more, of course, we want to hear it. But I'd like to know this information. I couldn't find this 2,500 pages of information. I couldn't find any place where there were documents. So do you have a direct link?
You've got to search the website a little bit better, because all of the documents, everything, it is the Encyclopedia of Fluoride. And Dr. Paul Connett, who is the director of that, is the man who woke me up about fluoride when I was a water commissioner, because when I read the words of what he said, the fluoride was used in Seattle waters and most U.S. districts. And I couldn't believe it came from the smokestacks for phosphate fertilizer plants. So, and he's also the one that has written the book, The Case Against Fluoride, back in 2010. And if you would like, there was recently a death in our fluoride group, and her husband saw fit to give me some of the books. I'd love to mail you the book, The Case Against Fluoride. They have never responded to that. So that's kind of interesting. But now let me just add one more.
Well, before you can have more words, before we move on from that point, let me just put this out there. I'm looking on a website, and I'm sorry, you saying something, Jen?
Oh, sorry.
Right. Look, I'm out there on the website now. It looks like it's going to be a little. I've been clicking buttons, going all over the place, trying to get a place where I can get a list of documents that I can download and make use of. But I haven't been able to find it. So anybody else that's on this call, if you go out there and do the research and find this information, by all means, you know, send it to, give a link or whatever you can to Jan so that we can download this information, because I think we should file something against the EPA on this also, on the federal level in the case that we're doing. But in order to do that, we need the evidence. And this sounds like all of the necessary research. You know, when we did the 9/11 thing, we got all of that research right there from 9/11. I think it was architects, I forget what the website
and engineers.
Was. Engineers, architects and engineers on 9/11 or something like that. But we downloaded all their stuff, and we included those documents and also the videos into the court case for research, you know, for consideration of indictments, and we put it up on our website. We'd like to do the same thing for the fluoride. We'd like to go after the EPA for that also, and start to put some pressure on them from our perspective. So, Allie, if you do get a hold of anyone that can get us directly to it to cut my research time, I haven't got time to spend too much time researching. And that's why we ask people to do it for us. So let's try to find
documents. Of interest, the attorney handling the lawsuit with the EPA in Northern District Court in Northern California is Paul Connett's son, Michael Connett.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would like, for some reason I just think maybe I should give you his phone number, that he might be a good one for you to talk about.
All right. Yeah, you can give it to us. Jan, if you could take this number and try to make a contact with this person, see if they're interested in talking.
I don't have it handy right now, so.
All right, well, you can get it to Jan when you get a chance, and then he'll get a conference call with the leadership here, and we'll have a conference call with him and see, you know, how he can assist us in information in order to bring also a court case from our perspective.
Well, you know, the thing that I really enjoy about this, and especially hearing that you take this to heart like I do, is this is doable. This is
absolutely
easy, because all we have to do is turn off the tap and stop that money flow and that bad agenda of dumping a hazardous product into our water.
Right, and if we could teach the local government to do that, because they're supposed to be doing the will of the people, we would shut down Washington, D.C. quickly. And again, it goes back to committees of safety. Everything and anything that anybody does on their local level or to participate with anything, if they do anything else or if they don't do anything else, but they should, at bare minimum, get involved with their committees of safety. Get active on the local level. Even if you turn us off and don't even listen to us anymore, you know, and get involved in your committees of safety, you'll get educated hopefully through them, because people there will be using our website for the information to educate them in order to get the tools, which is education, really. But
yes, but one of the big disappointments that I had, I mentioned being in those two courtrooms with my camera as a court observer to document this hearing. Mm-hmm. And you might remember that, the Zaidi case down in Olympia.
No.
Saeed Zaidi and his wife Anne. I decided, because I met a fellow by the name of David Spring, who wrote the book Free Yourself from Microsoft and the NSA, to have him download Linux on my laptop and set me up with a desktop, all hardwired. And at that point, he disappeared from my life, and I lost the ability to download from my video camera and my digital camera.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really kind of kept me back from being a court observer, because when I go to be a court observer, I want to document it, and they can't stop me from doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had heard, we had spoke to some people that I had heard that if you can install Linux and you can install, there's a Windows program or a program that you can use to install Windows inside of Linux, and once you install it inside of Linux, Linux is set up so it could prevent any kind of a backdoor access or entrance into your computer, even though you're using Windows. Now, I don't know if they now they got Windows, they keep updating the Windows. I don't even know where they're at with Windows, but whatever number they're up to. But, I don't know if that's still the case. I presume it is.
Well, I just got some good news. There's a young man in our circle who's in college, and he's just an IT person and he's into the Linux and everything, and he's going to come help me resolve this problem. He's now back from vacation and free time before he goes back to school. Mm-hmm. So I have help on the way to resolve that.
All right, well, we appreciate your input, appreciate your call, and we'll move on to the next caller. But do, if you can, get us any information more, a direct link or something, if you talk to anybody. And anybody else that's listening to call, if they're out there researching on fluoride and can collect all
the... Yeah, well, I think it's interesting really what's happening with this InPower movement. And again, this is why we're doing a Kickstarter campaign, because it takes money to do this and get all these documents available for everyone to use online for free.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay to get any of this. Most of us are just volunteers working our little what's off doing this.
Yeah.
And like I say, with Sabine, we asked for 35,000, we got over 50,000, but in the InPower movement, Josh, he helped me with Sabine promote no Wi-Fi in schools. And but he's asking for 85,000. But this is really powerful. But what's powerful is now that we're holding them liable with dollar amounts into the millions of dollars, that NLA is doing the work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have my hat on with the NLA and the NOL because I think we're going to maybe start seeing this in courts.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you brought up this internet access, whatever it was, internet access in schools. I guess, you know, I'm not aware of the problem with that, but, you know, maybe next week when you come, if you come on, maybe we can talk about that. I do want to move on to the next caller because we've been quite some time with a lot of people in the queue. But I'm interested in that subject to understand what is going on with the internet and our children in school. Okay? So maybe next week
yes,
can talk on that?
Can I just close with a little bit of inside information that I got
sure.
from a former deputy sheriff who, in her state, worked with the CIA and the FBI on big cases and everything, and it was very powerful, and being married to a fellow who worked for NASA and living in Washington, D.C. when she was, in her 20s, and she's also electro-hypersensitive. And you heard me mention criminal assault by radiation. Well, this came from her because she is now working with other powerful people, rangers rather, that are recognized in her state, rather than sheriffs. And they are going forward with lawsuits and claiming a criminal assault by radiation. So I'll know more about the fluoride issue because this Saturday we have our international fluoride-free monthly teleconference, and hopefully they will be giving us an update on how the lawsuit in Northern California is proceeding.
All right. Well, we appreciate that, and if you can get us any electronic information or documents, we'd appreciate that too, but hopefully others will be looking for that for us, and we'll put a case in for the fluoride. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, I'm proud to wear so many hats, and I see how deeply we are all connected. But then we are. We're all human beings. And I just so appreciate hearing readings from the Bible and giving us the truth. And last evening, this is kind of interesting. I, back in 2004, became acquainted with Dr. Masaru Emoto. Are you familiar with him?
I've heard that name, yes.
Yeah, he's the one that wrote Messages from the Water and Freezing the Water, Getting the Ice Crystals, the Beautiful Ones and the Ugly Ones with the Beautiful Words and the Ugly Words.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not aware of that. His name is familiar, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, he began the, he's out of Japan, and unfortunately, he suddenly died in 2013, very unexpectedly. But he started the Peace Project of getting a book out to children all about love and gratitude and how your words impacted the water.
Interesting.
And
so,
that
so
book
it's
is
like,
now
it's like
put in 33 languages. And Yasashima, she is carrying on the Emoto Project. And she spoke last evening. I got to see her again. But she had with her two fellows. And these two fellows are the sons of a Dr. Harvey Biggleson. I had never heard of him, but he took it to another new level, where Dr. Emoto was seeing the crystals in the water reacting from the words to the blood under a dark-filled microscope reacting to the conditions of the body. It's called holographic images.
Mm-hmm.
I had never heard of that before. Have you?
That is very, very interesting. And look, at God spoke this universe into being. You know, let there be light, and there was light, and so on. And he spoke creation into being. And, of course, string theory gets into the vibration and really is looking at the fingerprint of God, and everything has a vibration which, of course, the sound of God, His voice, created these things. So I can see how this could potentially have some credibility here, and I definitely would like to look further into it. I'll look on YouTube to see if I can find some YouTube videos on that and get a little.
Okay, well, let me give you something that will enforce things.
Let me just ask you, though, just to kind of bring it to an end, because there's a lot of people in the queue. We've got to move on to someone else. And next week, if you can, come on and let's talk about that other subject matter. What was it I wanted to look into?
On the Wi-Fi.
The internet,
yeah.
Into this Wi-Fi in the school. I'd like to learn more about that. But meanwhile, go ahead.
Can I please give you something in closing?
As long as you bring us to an end, because we've been closing
this,
for a while.
This is what I want to give. This is a beautiful end to what I've had to say, because this so changed my consciousness about water when I received it on September 19th, 2004, when Dr. Emoto was being interviewed by a guy named Rico. And his reply was, "I understand that many of your readers are people interested in spiritual matters, and I would like to answer this question from that perspective. I believe that prior to Adam and Eve, water itself held the consciousness of God, that God's intention was put into the water, into the medium of water, and that this was used in the creation of Earth nature. In other words, all of the information needed for God's creation was reflected in the water. And then we, Adam and Eve, were placed on earth to be the caretakers of this creation of God. I believe that water held the consciousness of God until then. But after that, the caretakers were placed on earth, water became an empty vessel to mirror and reflect what was in the heart. It became the container to carry energy and information. Therefore, since this time, I think water has taken on the quality of simply reflecting the energies and thoughts that it is exposed to, that it no longer has its own consciousness. Water reflects the consciousness of the human race."
Okay, Ali, I appreciate that, and let me move on to the next caller. But before I do, I do want to read something here, because, again, as I mentioned, and you were bringing up the point, the fact that ultimately that this creation was spoken into being. And if we open up our Bibles and just go to the book of Genesis, I'm going to read a few verses. I don't know how much I'm going to be able to contain myself from not reading too much, but let me read just a little bit anyway. In chapter 1, verse 1, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament, and from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the mornings were the second day. And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and gathering together of the waters called He seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herbs yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself, and in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were the third day. And God said, let there be light in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let there be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light upon the earth, and it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also." And it goes on, you know, for quite a bit more, but I'll just end there. The point is God used his words, and words are vibrations. And I know science is looking into the string theory and realizing it. And I'll tell you what, I've been watching a lot of the studies, you know, the programs, the documentaries on the universe and all these different documentaries that you can catch on, like Netflix and Hulu and whatever else is out there, or even YouTube and even on regular cable TV. I mean, it's just amazing what we're able to see and know of the universe and how far we can see and all the galaxies we can see, which once we thought were stars, and these stars are actually full-blown galaxies with billions and billions and billions of stars within that, and we just see it as one little pin of light in the heavens. It's just amazing, and I think science is coming full turn right around to the fact that This creation was spoken into being. All right, with that, thanks a lot, Ali, and we're going to move on to our next caller. We're going to go to Mark. Go right ahead, Mark. You've got the mic.
My own?
Last four digits, 1444.
And this is Mary.
Oh, how you doing, Mary?
I'm great. Thanks for asking, and you?
Good, thank you.
Great. A couple of things. Thank you for taking my call, because I'd like to tie this into something Ali was speaking of. And I think you know at this point, John, that I've been ahead of the curve on a whole lot of things,
mm-hmm.
as I am now. I do have an apparatus that will neutralize all of that. I've actually been utilizing it in my home, and several other people are as well. So I'll talk with you that, and it is based on a frequency, vibratory frequency. It's an advanced technology, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, Ali, I'm going to tie this into something that you shared, and it really is something that everybody pretty much knows. It's just that it's been distorted in the way it was presented to us. And so if it resonates with anyone that's on here, fine. Take it and ponder it for what it is for you, okay? A few universal beliefs. One is that there is one creator. There's only one creator, one architect, one designer of the universe. I call my creator God, but there are over 900 names. And this was some of the conditioning that was done to humanity in creating the division. But there's only one creator. There's only one source of all that is in the universe. And we've all been made to that image and likeness, which means we're all the same atoms and molecules. Especially since the greatest minds in the world, Einstein, Tesla, they declared that everything in the universe is matter. All matter is energy. Scientists have proven it over and over. And I'm going to fast forward for a moment to another conditioning, and that is that we all have an inner person, who we all are on the inside, the inner you. That's our soul. The part of us that passes on when our bodies, by design, die, and we continue on into the next leg of our infinite immortal journey. Another conditioning is that we're here for the spiritual experience. And they got the part right that we do have an inner soul, and it does pass on to the next leg of our infinite journey. But if we're infinite, immortal souls, then we certainly didn't begin in this life, though we did incarnate at our conception, not at the end of the first trimester or 120 days in utero, and that's all I'm going to say about that, other than somebody needs to let the Supreme Court know. Going back to the spiritual experience,
I'd like to take one step further, if I could, Mary.
Let me just finish, okay?
And
the conditioning of the spiritual experience, that's what else they got wrong. See, we're not here for the spiritual experience. We are the spiritual experience. We're here for the human experience. Look at the human experience some people are giving to themselves. Look at the human experience some people are giving to humanity. I like the shoes that I'm in. And I appreciate you giving me that moment to share that. There were a couple other things, but they eluded me, and that's really, in my humble opinion, the important thing.
Let me insert something there, because I appreciate what you're saying, but I think conception goes further back than conception in itself. In other words, our beginning is in the mind of God. The Bible tells us that that we had a relational God. God knows us from before the foundation of the world. So we,
that is
once
correct.
Once God made a conscious thought of me and you and everyone else, knowing how he was going to create and place us at some point in time, which is a great vast area place, we began there. So, you know, to destroy life even at the conception, that's why, you know, God makes the point that even birth control is evil, okay? And so it goes all the way back. But when it comes to people trying to abort a baby, obviously at some point, you know, look, at once the conception is there, the courts need to stay away from that. There's no decision.
Well,
you know, look at
that,
the idea of our law. Absolutely, but the idea of our law is that we are innocent and proven guilty. And with that kind of thinking and that logic, that child is a child until it's proven not to be. And they'll never be able to do that.
Well, what's gotten lost
we're gonna be
in all this,
for that.
John, what's gotten lost in all this is the living being of who we are is your soul.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
That infinite being began not just in this life, but the life, the human experience you're having in this life began at your conception. Your soul incarnated at your conception. Not
right,
a moment
later.
I
think you made that point. I think that's clear. I just wanted to take it back further, you know.
Well, correct, it absolutely
point. But
is.
You're right. Course,
and that being said, John, we all are the same atoms and molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly makes me wonder, who was I in a previous life?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, the purpose of life is to find God, is to find your Creator. That is the purpose of God. It is, the answer
is
so simple.
It is to be one with your Creator.
Well, again, to find Him. And ultimately to be found by Him, ultimately. I mean, because the Bible really teaches that He finds us. We were lost, but now we're found. But, you know, that is the purpose of life. And when you tell people who aren't ready to hear that, of course, you know, hopefully one day maybe they'll remember this and when they're ready to hear it. But that is the fact. And because there's nothing more important than to find your Maker, because that's where eternity is all about. And, you know, when you go into the Bible and you read the stories in the beginning, you know, Adam and Eve and eating off the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and so on and so forth, the whole thing is about coming to the knowledge and realization, the experience of life, of good and evil. That's what we're here for. And we're here because of the curse, ultimately. But it was also planned that way, in a sense, because and this is clearly laid out in the Bible, a prerequisite in order to become a son of God. You must first become a son of man. And there is only one exception to that, and of course that is Jesus Christ. But we must first become men, and women of course, mankind. We're first to become men, and then we are able to become children of God. So son of man first, children of God. And so therefore the whole process is to find yourself. And once you find your relationship with your Maker, of course now you'll be given your chore in life, which is to do good, whatever it is that's before you, no matter how simple or how complex, whatever it is before you, no matter how great or how little, maybe a lot of people or just one person that you influence, it's all irrelevant. It's what you do with what you've got, okay? And you can only do the good if you have that relationship with God. But I don't want to go too much more into that subject.
Yeah, I was going to say thanks. I appreciate it. And the other thing that is, I'm going to repeat, is that I have an apparatus that neutralizes RFs, EMFs, radio frequencies, microwaves. You know when you turn your TV on and it gives you magnetic energy being pushed off the screen? Mm-hmm. Like you can feel that energy when you walk by the TV?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very much familiar with what you're talking about.
Okay, that is totally neutralized. Mm-hmm. But it does more than just your house. So I'd rather not get into it right now on the phone.
What's involved in is that something we could make ourselves or something we have to purchase?
It's already been attempted to be reverse engineered and it was not possible. So the person it was given to, it is an advanced technology, and it is so affordable.
And it's a logical technology, too. I mean, anybody who understands how important vibrations are, you know, look at vibrations, you put it onto vinyl to create voices, you know. Vibrations in creation itself, again, getting to string theory. But you know, you're saying it is something that can be sold. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And it neutralizes the cell phone frequencies. Mm-hmm. It doesn't alter the telephone. It neutralizes all negative energy.
Does it help with health also?
Absolutely.
I know someone who has who builds machines that do that, the vibration, and you know, there's certain frequencies to help people who might have a cancer or some kind of other ailment, and if you get that frequency around the person within their
absolutely
home, it assists in the healing of that person. But again,
healing
you also have
frequencies.
But hold on,
John.
I just want to add up to that though. Even though you do that, you still have to get to the root of the problem, which ultimately, in my opinion, gets back to minerals and vitamins and different kinds of supplements that
it's
the body
needs. It's a balance
needs.
In everything.
Yeah.
You have to balance everything in your body. And there's been a deliberate attempt to throw our vibratory frequencies off balance. And they're doing it still
absolutely.
With radio frequencies. There is a depopulation agenda.
Absolutely.
I'm
they're building
sorry
towers
if people are
as
not
weapons
willing
across
to.
The United States to, as a weapon.
The things that are being done to us, that have been done to us for years, are really despicable. It's a whole lot more than just our court system. I mean, it's despicable what has been done to humanity,
right.
Period.
Well, Mary,
so,
let me ask you,
anyway,
can you get us this information? Maybe get it to Jan and Jan
yes,
get it to me. I'm very, very interested in this.
Absolutely. That's why I said I'll talk with one of y'all tomorrow, and I don't want to take any more time tonight. They're like $50.
Yeah, I'd like to get there. I'd like to look at that. I'd like to research it a little bit. I'd like to see what I think about it, and if
fine.
I can support it, which I think I might be able to, but again,
I already know that you would. I'm just going to tell you, I looked into a Faraday cage,
mm-hmm.
and that, like, they were $130, but all that did was retard the frequencies at my meter.
So this
is
just at that level?
I'm going to tell you, they put a smart meter on my house, and it killed the plant next to the tree next to my the smart meter, and it was killing the one on the other side, and it was doing damage to the trees across the driveway. Since I put this apparatus in my home, and I put it in and forgot about it, everything is flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even begin to tell you the things that are happening at my home. That's why I said I won't get into it right now. Move on with the call, and I'll give Jan a call in the morning or have him call me.
Let's get that information. It sounds good.
And,
I like it.
It's, you know what? I've been sitting on it for quite a while, and now that somebody's asked and made reference to the radio frequencies, the smart meters, absolutely. This is an advanced technology that was given to us for this purpose. So, and as I said, it was given quite a while ago. So thank you very much. Appreciate your humoring me. You all have a great night, and I'll yield.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
All right, let me go to our next caller, Greg from Florida. Go right ahead, Greg.
Yes, I just had news that I wanted to share on the Bundy trial. One-third of the Idaho legislators wrote a letter to Jeff Sessions, and they are vehemently opposed to them retrying these people in Nevada again. If I will, I can read you just a little bit of it. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but if I can just do a little paragraph here.
Give us a little bit, and if you can get that to Jan, something we can look at. I'd like to look deeper into it, but give us a little bit of it.
The legislators say, we believe that the decision by the current U.S. attorney in Nevada to prosecute these men a third time represents disrespect for the rule of law and the jury system. Representatives vote. A third trial would show blatant disregard for tax funds collected from hardworking law-abiding citizens who are represented by these juries who have found them innocent of 34 of the 40 charges and hung by the very slimmest of margins in those that the jury stood deadlocked. The decision of a 10-2 to acquit in the first trial and 11-1 to acquit in the second trial highlights a narrow margin by which the prosecution hopes to continue their attack. And then it goes down and it just says, there's quite a bit more to this, but I just wanted to read the rest of it. It says, this prosecution sends a chilling message to the public who are concerned about the federal overreach in their daily lives that is inharmonious to the well-established constitutional guarantees. The percentages of jurors causing the hung verdicts in these trials should send a clear signal to the government prosecutors of the jury's reticence and further prosecute these defendants has clearly been received by the public. So anyway, I just thought I'd give you that little bit of news there.
Okay, appreciate that. But yeah, get a copy of that to Jen.
Well, now what you can do, this is online at the dcclothesline.com, and they have a feed. If you just go to dcclothesline.com, they give you feeds all day on this kind of stuff. But also, this actually came, they fed it through Freedom Outpost.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, let's take our next caller, April. How you doing, April? Go right ahead. April. April, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Well, can you hear me now?
We can hear you now. You sound like a Verizon commercial.
I have an email from one of our members, and she wanted me to ask a question for her.
Okay.
She says, I am facing a non-judicial tax foreclosure in 7 weeks because I cannot afford to pay the tax. I am not a resister or protester. I was told that filing civil rights lawsuit in federal court will stop the sheriff's sale. Is this true?
Was not the sheriff's what?
I missed
the last part of that.
I was told that filing a civil rights lawsuit in federal court will stop the sheriff's sale. Is this true?
Well, if you can get it into the courts And the courts, once you get into the courts, the sheriff can't go forward if it's being heard. Although often they do just ignore that, that's a problem, you know. But look at these non-judicial tax foreclosures is unconstitutional. They're unlawful. It's very easy to prove and show. But herein is the problem with our judges. They just refuse to allow justice to prevail in our courts, which they call their courts, of course, but they refuse to allow it to go through. You know, you may be lucky to get a judge that might hear the case and consider it, but I don't know that they'll ever go up against the tax. It might be like signing their own death warrant. I don't know. But we do intend on bringing this to the full weight of the court. We're doing a lot of filings ourselves on this. As you know, we're doing the non-judicial tax foreclosures, the non-judicial mortgage foreclosures, and we're just adding them up, more and more and more. And again, it's all a matter of pressure and stress. You know, the judge is going to do where he's pressured most to go. Right now, there is an extreme amount of pressure on these judges to not to rule for justice, but to rule for the status quo, which is unlawful status quo. But when the weight, when the weight of what we're doing is greater than the weight that is upon them on that side, that's when we break through the courts and we will prevail. And that's where we're heading for. It's going to take that critical mass. It's going to take that stress, that pressure that's just going to be so great upon them, they're just not going to be able to hold back no more, and they're going to look to save their own skins. And that's how we're going to end up getting into the courts. But until then, we just got to keep building the pressure. You know, I don't know that that person's going to be successful in a federal court. Certainly not on their own, they're not going to be successful. We may be successful, or they may get success where the judge puts the pressure. I doubt if they put the pressure on the side of the county, you know, to say, hey, back off on this one. I doubt they would do that there. But that would be the only way. The judge might do that kind of pressure on the mortgage company, and just to get the case out of the court without having to make a ruling, tell them to work something out because, you know, maybe they have a conscience and they're trying to work something out. But you'll never get a court case to make that decision. I don't think you'll ever get a court case to make that decision without twisting their arm so much that to the point of breaking it and requiring them to do what has to be done. And that's what we're trying to do here at NLA, you know.
Right. So I think her main question was about filing the civil rights lawsuit. Like, is that a good idea to do?
Well, again, you know, it's one person. It's going to be sitting in the court for a while. They're going to push it around. They're going to throw it. You know, they're eventually going to find a way to not hear it or throw it away or something. They make up these things. For every, you know, common law says for every injury there must be a remedy. Clearly there is an injury here. You know, if you want to take someone's property, give them their due process. And that's it. It's that simple. And if you can give them the due process, which they cannot do because they can't, they don't have the ability to take property away from people. If they're forced in that way, that's really the battle, the fight of due process. Look, I'll give them my property, they can have it, and I won't even put up a fight if they give me my due process. You know, show me the fiduciary authority. Give me the proof of claim. And until you do that, you don't have a right or authority to take my property. That's the battle.
Can you file a lawsuit if, like, say somebody's incarcerated wrongfully, of course, denied due process? Can you file a lawsuit for damages for even before they are released?
Well, I guess you could do that. I don't know that would be the way to go about it. You'd want to get them released first and then file for damages. But you can go, look at, it gets back to the same thing. Yeah, you can get the damages and the fact that they haven't got due process. Let me give you an example. Anytime a judge speaks to the jury, it's a tainted jury. People are not, even though they're getting a jury trial, they're not getting true process. The jury may see through all the lies and the scheme in that particular area, in that particular case, and make the right decision. That's a possibility. But ultimately, people are not getting due process. When a grand jury is given information, statutory information, and with the statutory information alone forces an indictment, that's not proper. And that's not part of the due process that people need to have to go through in order to get into the court. They have to go through an indictment by the people. And then once they're in the court, again, once the judge taints that jury, just the fact of the way they choose the juries, just the fact that they argue, I don't like this jurist, I don't like that jurist. Why? How do they know who they like and who they don't like? Because they ask them stupid questions like, what news media do you listen to? Do you listen to Fox or do you listen to CNN? Well, just think about that.
What's your favorite show?
Just think about that. Do you watch police stories? You know, I mean, all kinds of stupid. Who are these people? What are these questions? I don't know. Anybody who reads the we got a copy of the rules, the federal rules, and we wrote a paper on it. It's evil. It's evil. Yeah. Look at, you know, if you have information that makes this person judgment that you see as a jurist that you think is incapable of being a jurist in this case, fine, you can bring it up. But you can't be asking all these questions. There are very minimum questions that jurists need to be asked, you know?
Yeah,
one of the main questions is, do they know anything about this case? Are you familiar with this kind of a case? If they got any information on this case, then they can't hear the case, okay? And just a very few questions, you know? But generally, that are logical and obvious questions that need to be asked. You know, are you employed by the government? Do you work for the government? Well, you can't be a jurist if you're employed by the government, you know. You know, that's obvious. It's illogical. It's sensible. Okay, but don't ask me what TV programs I watch. Don't ask me if I believe in that jury nullification is correct or incorrect. Don't talk to me about those things, you know. But that's what they do. So every jury out there is tainted from day one. Every grand jury, every trial jury, every trial is tainted. I see the games they play all the time to hide and suppress. People have a right to defend themselves. They have a right to build their case and whatever they want to build up. Look what they did out with the, what they tried to do in Oregon. They refused these people to allow to give the reasoning why they were there and what was going on. Well, isn't that important to understand whether intent is there or not, to understand what was going on in the mind of the person that caused them to do whatever it is that they think they did, and then be able to find out what they really did, you know? I mean, all this information, you know, the fact that these people, when they took over the wildlife preserve up there, the fact that they rebuilt the place, cleaned it up, and repaired things, and brought it back to decency, okay? That was not permitted in the court case, okay?
Yeah.
What led them there was not permitted. I mean, this is the evil of our court system, the evil. And so the juries don't get to hear this stuff. They don't get to see this. They don't get to know this stuff.
They don't even know what they're supposed to be doing, because they're not telling them this is what a jury is supposed to do. So, because I'm reading about intent. If you don't have intent, you have no conviction.
That's right. And if you don't have the ability to defend against yourself to show that your intentions were good and not evil, if you don't have the ability to make that case, then you're not having the ability to defend yourself and make your case. That's a violation of rights of due process, period. And again,
exactly.
So every case that is anywhere, I don't care what case it is, I can build a case to show that whole thing has to be overturned, because people never really got their true due process.
Yeah, without due process, they have no jurisdiction, even if they had it.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
See, I'm learning.
All right, anything else?
No, that was it.
Okay, thanks a lot, April.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's take the next caller. Let's see, it's a 209 number. What is it? 499, there's no name there. 209-499. You've been unmuted. One more call, 209-499-6534, last call. I think I heard something. Hello.
John?
Yeah.
I'm just reading an email from Russ Van Sant, one of our members, and apparently somebody thinks that we are involved with the Colorado 8 trial. And we have testified for the prosecution. We have nothing to do with that trial, do we?
No, not at all.
That's what I thought.
I don't know. I got to admit my ignorance here. What's the Colorado 8 trial?
I think that's the first bunch of the Bruce Doucette types.
Oh, okay.
That got arrested.
Yeah, we're not involved. We're not doing anything in any of that stuff. That's
right.
These people, they're not getting their due process either, by the way.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
Even though I perceive, from my perspective, that they should be indicted and that they should go to trial, that's my opinion, okay? We're not participating in any of that. But nevertheless, we would need to defend their right to due process that they're not getting, and I don't see them going to get it.
Yeah, right. Okay. I'll respond.
All right, thanks. Okay, let's go. Last call for 6534. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Next caller, you've been unmuted. 913 area code, looks for Montana. ASULU, I don't know how to pronounce that. ASULU? ASULU. Looks like from Montana, maybe?
Yes, hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, well, my question, it might be out of line with the call tonight, but I was just wondering, what would happen to those, show costs that were sent out to the jurors.
What happened what?
What happened if they don't respond to that?
To what? Don't respond to what?
To those, show costs that the grand jury sent out to them.
Oh, well, look, they've got us on ignore. I think our next paper is going to really make our point and put the magistrate of the case on call. You know, he's going to put him on the hot seat, so to speak. And so we're not going to discuss too much of what we're going to say or do with that. We're writing the papers right now. And I think by next Monday we'll have them done and we'll read them online. Of course, we're on ignore. We have a judge, which we call the fixer. You know, every courthouse has a fixer, a guy who's willing to even go to jail, I guess. Maybe he's paid enough. You know, but he's going to put himself really far out there on the limb, like this judge has done, Judge Lawrence. What's his full name, Jan? Do you remember?
Say Lawrence. Again. Lawrence Kahn. K-A-H-N.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kahn. Okay. You know, he's put himself out there, and we've got to the point of indicting him, and he's ignoring that. We've given him a writ of error. He's ignoring that. We've made a paper making it clear to him that he's lying, because he's saying that we don't have that we're coming in as plaintiffs and we don't have a lawyer. That's the reason for the case that he has set claims to have thrown out. They are still taking our paperwork, by the way. But and when they stop doing that, we got a plan to deal with that also. But nevertheless, we put them on the spot. We let them know, look, we're not coming in as plaintiff. We're expecting to get prosecutors given to us by the Attorney General. We're expecting prosecutors to do their duty and obey the Constitution and deal with when a crime is revealed. It is their duty to prosecute it, to bring it. First of all, you know, when the grand jury brings it to them, it's important for them. It's their duty to prosecute. If they discover it, it's their duty to bring it to the grand jury for potential prosecution. They're not doing that, and that's okay. It's okay. We'll continue to build the pressure. We'll continue to add the cases. The more and more cases we get in, the more and more pressure, the more and more people that participate and get involved, the more and more pressure, the more papers we copy to others. We're not just putting it up there. We got them up on our line. They're up on other places on the Internet. They're in the House of Representatives. They're in the Senate. The Attorney General's got a copy of all our papers, and so does the President. So we've got it in quite a few places. And we'll see. Time will go on, and justice will prevail. It's the old story of the tortoise and the hare. And in the end, justice is going to prevail. And there's nothing they're going to do to be able to stop the judgment that is coming upon these people. The only thing they could do now is repent and turn from their ways and start to do right. And then at that point, they would get. If they truly do that, they would get mercy.
Amen to that. Well, I just want to say that, you know, I appreciate all the hard work that's gone to this, great, great movement, in the history. And we are praying for NLA to have favor and to move this forth, so with the common law. Thank you very much.
Well, amen. I appreciate that. And let us remember that only the people can save America. We need everybody pushing against this door to open up these courtroom doors to bring justice back into our courts. So, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye.
Right. Let us take our next caller, Felicia from Florida. Go ahead, Felicia.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. And yourself?
All righty. I have a question. How do you deal with a sheriff's office that you've informed months ahead of time and through the local courts that this was a summons?
Well, look, unfortunately, he's got the same problem we all had. We're ignorant. Ignorant to the law, ignorant to liberty, ignorant to our founding fathers, our history. Our Constitution, just total ignorance. And it's unfortunate that this individual took an oath to swear to uphold and protect the Constitution, and yet they're ignorant to that Constitution. They're ignorant to the history of that Constitution. They're ignorant to the meaning of those words. And the only thing we could do is educate them. And you could try that on a personal level, and you know, that takes time, and you got to be careful not to push too hard because you don't want to come sounding like a crazy or anything. But I'll tell you, look, there's power in numbers, okay? That's where it's at. And committees of safety, that's your key. Everybody that's having a problem with their sheriff, if you want to bring your sheriff in line and try to get him to do the right thing, you got to start a committee of safety. Follow the process we've set up. You want to befriend the sheriff. You don't want to attack him. You don't want to tell him what he's doing wrong.
He doesn't even want to be with me.
Well, at this point, because, you know, again, you're going up against his reality. Reality is the way one perceives it. And right now he perceives the ignorance as his reality, and he sees you as a wacko. And he's been told that you're a wacko, you know, I'm sure. You know, you're one of those people, huh? You know?
I'm a truther.
Yeah, you're one of those. You know, but what we have to do is try to be sober, try not to get into the man on the land, try not to, look, you can't hit someone with too hard when they're in a reality that is so fictional. Reality, the true reality is fiction to them, and they just can't see it. You know, you don't go up and tell anybody, you know, the government did 9/11 or something like that. I mean, it's just too big a thing. You know, people have to learn about it slowly, and it has to come upon them. And again,
oh my
we
God,
have a
it's
plan.
So hard trying to
we
wake
have,
people up.
We have a, it is hard, but we have a plan. Okay, COS. Click on our COS button. Get a committee of safety. Get it started. Build it up, and follow the plan, the blueprint. Okay, we have a blueprint out there, and you can add to this and change it around and shake it up and so on and so forth. But you have to go real gentle to the sheriff. And the first thing you want to talk to the sheriff about is that he's the top cop. He wants to be that top cop. You want to empower that. You want to empower that sheriff. So you tell him about how he is, that he's the top cop, that he controls the county ultimately as far as the law. He is the chief law enforcer of the county. Nobody is above him. Nobody. President can't come and say nothing concerning his execution of law, how he sees it, and he understands it. But he better understand it right if he's going to execute it. Otherwise, he's guilty of being a lawbreaker himself and a violator of his oath. But the key thing is this, again, you want to empower him. You want to let him know you're here because he's here to protect the people. We're the people. We want to support you. We want to make sure that you have all the information you need. Little by little, let him come to the meetings. You start off on the low end, and again, follow the plan we have. And eventually, you're going to give him information that eventually is going to lead him to United States Supreme Court rulings, which is going to make crystal clear what the law is. You're going to lead him to our founding fathers and natural law in itself, common law. And all of this, the power of the sheriff, the history of the sheriff, all of this, as time goes on, he will learn by coming to your meetings little by little. You see, he's the first guy you got to bring on board. You don't go after a town first. You don't go after a city. You got to go after the sheriff and get him to come to the meetings. And you let him. And when you go to the towns, you let the towns know, look, you guys got it all figured out. We're not interested in trying to change the way you do things. You got fire departments here. You got rescue people. You got police officers. You got all these people. They're experts in their field. They know what they need to do during an emergency. Our concern is that during that emergency, we need that top cop here to make sure that the Constitution is not violated. You see, you can get an agreement with all of that, and the town will agree with you as you go on, you know. And again, it becomes an education. You want to get, printed material to them. And so you're going in, when you're going into the town, you're going in with the sheriff's endorsement in the Committee of Safety, because that's what you're first chasing, is the sheriff's endorsement. Once you get that, now you can go with a little more authority. You now, at this point, should have quite a few people, maybe 10, 20, or 30, or 50 people. I don't know. But you want to gather enough people, and you start going into the towns and talking to the towns. And you want to empower the towns, but you want to also talk about the things that they don't know, our concern. This is the concerns of the people, that we don't lose our liberty. If a state of emergency comes up, you know, we don't want the feds coming in here taking control. We already have people. The towns can take control. They have all the rescue teams and everything they need to deal with any emergency. If the feds want to give you money, fine. If they want to come in with a little force to back you up, as long as you control them, they don't control you, fine. But that sheriff is the guy that's the pinnacle, okay? And then you've got, of course, the militia working with you. If there's a militia active in that area, they get involved with you. If there's no active militia, maybe the county next door has one, or a few counties away. You talk with them, ask them to help you to get an unorganized militia going in your county, and so on. You see, there's a plan. If everybody executes that plan to work, to befriend our local community and educate them and change their minds and their thinking and bring them to sober reality and thinking, then they'll be in a position to hear the hardcore stuff, okay? And that'll come to them on its own. You don't even have to go to 9/11. You don't have to go to the really hardcore stuff. That stuff will come to them on its own, okay? But once you bring them to the reality, okay? So that's what we got to do.
Now,
but if you can, one person can get to a sheriff and get them on the right track, that's a good beginning too. But most sheriffs are going to have a problem changing their position and thinking. But go ahead, Felicia.
But they've already received the documents back in June,
mm-hmm.
and they sat on it.
Right. Because they don't know what to do. They'll go talk to a lawyer to get legal counsel, and the lawyers will say, these guys are crazy. Don't worry about them.
The sheriff gave it to an investigator, and he's like, he lied to me, so I was like, I don't mm-hmm. trust you, dude.
Right. Well, his investigator would be one of his deputies or something, maybe his lieutenant or someone like that. You know, we had that situation with the sheriff we tried to speak to, and he didn't want to speak to us, but he did give us his lieutenant. And his lieutenant, he thought we were wackos. But after a while, when we were conversing with him, bringing up certain things and showing him the law, this guy had a little bit of a law background, not enough to really hurt him, damage his thinking totally, but enough to appreciate the law and the letter of the law. And we started to share with him some Supreme Court rulings, and he understood that, okay? He understood that. And it was like this guy had an epiphany right at the table as he sat with us. He says, wow, I see this, yeah. Okay, so we were getting to him, all right? And you can get to these people that way too. So if you have an investigator, it's probably an individual, probably a deputy or someone, a lieutenant or someone in the sheriff's department. And if you could sit down and reason with him with Supreme Court rulings to begin his journey of truth and correction into the way he's thinking, that's where it begins, in my opinion.
I tried that when I hand-delivered them the summons from the grand jury directly, and they called me a couple of days later.
Well, what they did is they gave it to their legal counsel. You see, all these sheriffs and all these elected individuals, they don't read anything we give them. When they get something like that looks legal, they give it to the New World Order. What do we call them? The lawyers is what we do call them. Okay, they give them to the lawyers, and the lawyers look, this is crazy stuff, and they brush it aside. They never read it. They don't read it. That's their problem. Minions is the word I was looking for. The New World Order minions. Okay, so that's the problem. Our problem is lawyers. Okay, bar-taught lawyers, people who are not taught the Constitution, they're taught statutory law, period, and they try to control our behavior. That's the enemy of we the people. Any lawyer that thinks that way is a problem. So, all right, but
well,
anyway.
They're trying to evacuate me,
look,
and it says that I'm a tenant.
Look,
for me,
yes,
to take
of
money
course.
For 30 days.
Yeah, of course. Look, that's their game. You see, once they do the magic in the courts through the non-judiciary foreclosure process, they make you the tenant, and they become the holder of the deed, and now they become the landlord, and then the sheriff is executing your eviction. In a lawful manner, as far as anything concerned from him, he is doing the law. But if you can show him that it was achieved fraudulently, maybe he has the guts to be able to step up and do something. But there's very few people, very few sheriffs willing to do this. Remember, most sheriffs were law enforcement to begin with, and they've already been ruined in police departments. Their thinking
right.
has been destroyed there already. And they're also politicians, and that becomes another problem. Not so much the politician. That could be good, but they do. Some of them become hardcore politicians, and that becomes a major problem. But look it. Go up onto the COS page. Put in your county, your state, and your county. See if there's a committee of safety in your county. If there is, join up and become part with that and work to get to learn to know the sheriff. Do it the way we've shown you. Look at, people don't know what to do, how to create a committee of safety. That's why we've given them a lot of information, sort of a guideline, okay, a structure, a framework.
Mr. John, I know that's a lot considering the fact that I'm about to be homeless and the only way for me to actually help is to actually maintain my home and actually have internet
right,
so that I don't go to the library.
Yeah, I understand that, but you gotta face reality and prepare for the worst. But bear in mind, you know, the day of justice will come. Either the end of the world will come first, you know, that's a good possibility too. But justice, if justice comes to America and we start to bring these people to justice, your case will be reheard and you will get restored back to your original state. Now, these people will need to restore you. Okay, it's going to be a mess and a big problem, but it's going to have to happen one way or another. If we're going to bring justice back into the courts, we got to bring restoration back to the people who have been destroyed by these maniacs. You know?
Yeah.
But that's in the future, and I don't know how far in the future. Could it be a week? Could it be a month? Could it be a year? I don't know. I doubt it's going to be a very long time, but I think we're structured well enough. I think it's close. But I can't say when. You know, I don't know when critical mass is going to happen. Critical mass is going to be an overwhelming thing. You got to understand that. When we hit critical mass, it's an avalanche occurs. You know, a little pebble falls down the mountain, and another pebble falls down the mountain 6 days later. And maybe a month later, a couple of rocks fall down. And as time goes on, all of a sudden, something big enough to hit something else, and now you have an avalanche. That's what we're looking for. That's what we're doing. We got a lot of rocks falling down the mountain. We got a lot of pebbles, and it's pushing this one and that one, and it's about to become an avalanche. Exactly when, I don't know. I mean, but look at, we can't give up. Woe is us if we give up, because what are we doing? What are we really doing? We're really doing the godly thing. We're bringing God back into the courts, the king back into his court. That's what we're doing. We're bringing justice back into the American society. That's what we're doing. What greater work can we do than to work for God, to bring him back into our justice system? Because, you see, if God's in our justice system, then he is going to judge this nation. And he is going to bring this evil down through the people, through those of us who sit on those juries. Okay, we sit on what's called the king's bench. The jury bench is the king's bench. We are to represent him. We're to do his will. We're to uphold his law. Okay, that's called natural law. That's the creator, nature's law, nature's God, nature's law. That's what it is. What greater work can you do if you're on that level? And anybody involved here and hearing these things and understanding these things and appreciating these things, now they have a duty to. If you walk away, woe is you. You know, a lot of people haven't heard this, but they're doing what they're doing on their level. If they're doing the right thing, whatever it is, you know, it could be just very something simple. You know. But anyway, that's the best I can tell you. Hopefully it'll be soon, but be prepared. Be prepared. Don't be the proverbial ostrich with your head in the sand and you find yourself out of your home and you didn't make preparations for it. Stop making preparations. Hang in as long as you can. Fight as long as you can. And even without or in, participate with a committee of safety. You don't have to be a leadership. You can be just a participant. I have a feeling you'd be a leader in it. But participate, and let's get your home back.
I'm still in it right now, but, you know,
right.
You want
be
me
ready.
Out.
Be ready.
I will.
Okay, we got a couple of more callers, so anything else?
No, sir.
All right, I appreciate the call, Felicia.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work, and keep the faith, you know?
Yes, sir.
Indeed. Okay, April again. Let's take April. Go right ahead, April.
Well, first I wanted to say happy belated birthday to you.
Okay, thank you.
And second,
How can we get copies of oaths that judges, prosecutors, and officials take?
You can ask for them. They're supposed to give them to you, but they won't. It should be in the county record. Maybe the clerk should probably have a copy. I don't know, but at least should be in the county record. I don't know if Brent is still here, if he has knowledge of this stuff, but I think it's got to be in the county record. I know here in New York, when we tried to pursue them, they told us, we finally tracked them down, and they were all the oaths for all the judges in New York, every single judge in New York State's oath is down in New York City, in the Southern District down there, where the eight kings of the court live and operate all their dirty deeds, which are all eight administrative judges that control whether justice flows or injustice flows, and clearly they've decided injustice flows. They don't want, as a matter of fact, you know, on a state level, we did indict those eight judges when we were working on the state level. That's right after that indictment, we left the state and went federal to the federal courts because we saw we weren't getting anywhere. But those indictments still sit, and they will be applied. And we'll take them to the federal court and put them in there soon.
So what do you think of county organizers all trying to get the oaths of all the judges and officials in our counties?
Yeah, you could do that. I would first love to see you get all county organizers and the state coordinators first collectively together in one place under the name of Committees of Safety, and that's one of the tasks you could be working on. You know, again, there's so many tasks you can be working on for the benefit of your county as a whole, as a people, under the Committees of Safety. You can work on getting the oaths of office from the judges. You can work on the fluoride problems in whatever towns and cities have town and city water. You can work on a lot of different problems that hit the whole county. And then, of course, when you get to that point and you got the sheriff on board, you start going town by town, city by city, visiting these people, overwhelming them, hopefully with 50 or more people, or 25, 30, 50, 100 people, whatever it is you've built up to be able to go into the towns and the counties. And you start with the towns and the counties that you have membership in, people that are in the committees of safety. You know, and this is where it all, look at the people need to do this together. United we stand, and divided we will fall.
We should post them. We should have on a website or on an LA website or a Facebook website, we should post all the oaths that we collect.
Well, we should, yes, you're right. Right now we post all the committees of safety, so you can find out if there's one in your county right now by going to the COS page and making a search. And if there isn't one, whoever goes out there, start one. Connect with one or two other people. Get your liberty groups involved in this. Speak to your liberty groups. Bring them out to the page. Bring the information. Show them the power and the authority that liberty group can have and how that liberty group would work with another liberty group on the next town over and how you come together in the county and how you can assist even your sister counties. Get help them to, once you're successful in getting your structure in, help the county next door to do the same. Let's say in that county, each county helps each other, state by state, county by county, state by state. We, the people, will prevail, but only if we step up and do something.
We need to get more members, though, because at Lincoln, right. North Carolina, we have a lot of members, but we're real spread out.
Right, I understand that. Well, again, if you got just a few people, a few NLA members in the county, all you need is one or two. And even if there's no other one in the county, which you probably should have a few, but if you don't have any, you know, you could take, you or the couple of you could take the message to your local liberty groups. Most of us belong to liberty groups. We may not be that active, but let's get back there. And let's go talk to the membership. Let's give them, teach them about the committees of safety, you know, all the stuff they're doing. You can continue to do the same stuff you're doing as a committee of safety, but you could do it with power and authority. Okay?
Find liberty groups in the area.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. I yield.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's take our next caller. It is a 631, which I think is Long Island, isn't it? 631-3651 number. No name. 631 phone number. You've been unmuted.
Hello.
Yes, first name and state.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. First name and state.
Okay. My name is Zoe, and I'm in New York.
How are you doing, Zoe? You're in Long Island, okay.
Yes. I filed a counterclaim last Friday, and it's against the state. It's against the ordinances, and she didn't want to take it. She said that I never had a counterclaim that was against the ordinances, but she did take it. She took it, but she wouldn't give me a receipt. Does that mean I don't? It isn't.
Well,
filed?
When you said you filed, what did you do? Go to the court to do that? The Supreme Court?
I went to the
county
court,
clerk.
The county clerk.
Right, for the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court, just the local court. How do I know if it's a Supreme Court?
What's the name of the court? It is
The Sixth District Court in Suffolk County.
Okay, yeah, that could very well be the Supreme Court. We call them the Supreme Court here in New York, and it's usually has a county name. It's New York State Supreme Court, County of. You know, whatever your county is. And that's...
Go ahead.
It could also be a county court. County court is a court of record also, by the way, in New York State anyway.
Of record? You mean it's automatically a court of record?
Yeah, county courts and state courts. Not that they abide by that, not that they're operating as that. Just like the federal courts are Article III courts, which are courts of record, and yet they don't operate as an Article III court. They break all the laws, but it's hard. You know, you got to bring them along, and look, it's a hard battle to what you're trying to do, and it's a hard battle if you're doing it yourself. There's that old thing, and I've heard this since I was a kid. I remember being very young and hearing this. I heard you can't fight City Hall, you'll never win, and that's embedded in me as a child. Okay. But I've come all the way past that and realized, yes, we can fight City Hall. Okay? We can fight them, and we do, and we will.
Well, the thing is, I made the paper wrong. The day after I got home, because I filed it at like 3:48, and they closed at 4 o'clock, and I filed it on the last day.
Yeah, but if you filed a paper, you had to get an RJI, and that's a request for judicial interference, intervention. RJI. You also, there's another one. I'm trying to think what the other one is. One is $295, and then the other one is $110 or $105. Together, it's just under $400. It's $300 and change. You also have to fill out a request for an index number. You can hold off on the RJI and do the index number first and then get the case going.
But the thing is, I have a court case coming up. The thing is, this that she took from me, I think she stamped it, and I said, I want a receipt. And she wouldn't take money. I couldn't get a receipt because she wouldn't take money, right? But she said, well, I could stamp your if you have a copy. And
right.
I came prepared. I have a copy.
Right.
So
right,
I
but did you write it up as a court case? You know, do you have the proper heading? You know, do you have the people called? You know, either you're a petitioner or you're the plaintiff one of the
how
people.
How did I have
something.
It written up? Well, I have my name, and I should have done counterclaim plaintiff, and then the people of New York counterclaim.
Well, if you count the claiming something, that means there's an existing court case which already has an index number. You can use that index number to use the heading of the court, and then you call yourself a counterclaim.
I got the index number on the right side.
Okay.
I mean, it looks beautiful. But
okay, so all you got to do is that fact that you took and they gave you a copy of the front page that's been stamped, that's your receipt. That's good. Then you're in the court.
The stamp says Suffolk County District Court, and then it has 2017 September 1, P, and then it's 3:48, and it's
okay,
sixth district. Is that like a
yeah,
receipt?
That's it. You're good for that. But the question is did you ask? Did you tell the court what you're looking to do? Did you first of all did you do an affidavit with it?
Without
an affidavit,
it
has no power. Okay. Do you have a wherefore clause in it? Do you understand what that is?
Say that again.
Do you have a wherefore clause at the end?
I didn't put anything at the end.
Okay, because the court, wherefore clause tells the court what you're seeking. If you don't have a wherefore clause, then the court has no idea what you're really seeking. You have to have to the conclusion of what you're looking for the court. You're moving the court to execute something.
But I said that there's no jurisdiction. So at the top, I said I have no jurisdiction.
Well, then you have to have a wherefore clause of what you're looking the court to move the court to conclude something. And that's what the wherefore clause is for. Let me suggest...
Without a wherefore clause, is this a waste of time? Or this will be...
Without a wherefore clause, you have nothing going on. Yeah, the court has no clue what you're really looking to do. You're making a case, but you're not moving the court. Your wherefore clause moves the court for a conclusion, okay? If they don't answer your paper and they default, then you can execute your wherefore clause. Of course, by pushing the court to move the court to execute that whatever it is that you're looking to get the court to do. Okay, sure. Now
is there a way to stop that trial? Because I have
what
to
do mean?
That
you,
trial.
You can
jury,
you can update
trial.
Your paperwork.
This paperwork that I just put in.
You filed. You have to get away. Look, let me tell you what. It sounds like you got enough information to know something, but not enough. But you have enough information, you'll understand instructions pretty easy here.
Yeah.
It's going to cost you a couple hundred bucks, but and again, we don't control this. But go get the jurisdictionary course on our website. Buy it through us. Click our link because then we'll get the credit. If you go straight to his website, you're going to jurisdictionary on our
I
website.
I got zero
you bought,
from that. The information I got was from. Bill Thornton on
no,
his
no,
case.
that's different. Okay, he's running things. He's running, but there's still education you're missing. Bill Thornton doesn't give it all.
12:15.org. I got
yes.
That's
good. But remember,
that's
look,
where I found out how to write this up properly.
I understand, but he doesn't explain everything you need to understand in order to file the papers. He doesn't really explain how the courts work from the perspective of a lawyer. Okay, that's where this jurisdictionary course comes in, that does explain this. Okay, it lays out, it breaks up the pieces of a court case. It breaks it up into little pieces, and you can see it explains you have to get the RJI, you got to do the index number, you have to have a summons. Did you put a summons in there? If you didn't put a summons in there, and direct it to someone, right there they throw it out of the court. The lawyers will go in and say, "Hey, we never received the summons. That is piece of paper. Don't know what it's for." They throw it
the
right out. Doesn't mean anything.
I need a summons.
Yeah, well, if you're making a counterclaim, you have to give them a summons, absolutely.
Oh.
And you have to give them a notice. Yeah. And
the notice before? And how many days? If I gave them a notice?
Well, then they got 30 days to respond, which is the normal process.
Oh, so I could have put in a notice and then waited 30 days instead of putting this in?
Right, and at 30 days, if they don't respond to a properly... if you put the paper in properly and they don't respond, they default. And if they default, then they have to execute your wherefore clause. Okay? Now, look, listen to what I'm saying, because it sounds like you got information, but you don't have enough. Okay? You're missing pieces. You'll find those pieces in the jurisdictionary course. Okay? Now, let me explain. The jurisdictionary course, we're resellers. National Liberty Alliance is a reseller. If National Liberty Alliance had written that course, we would have been given it for free. But the guy who wrote it is a lawyer,
yeah,
and
I
we learned from him. So he's charging, I think it's $275 or $375. I got to go out and take a look. I don't remember what it was. $275
it's $250.
Is that what it is? Okay.
For me.
Well, if you click our link, okay, to get to his website.
I did click your link. I was careful about that.
We will be credited. We get $50 out of his whatever he charges.
Well, I gave you $500, so...
I know who you are.
I should be on your good, kind of your plus list, right?
Oh, yeah, I know who you are. We spoke. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
But anyway, the main thing about my
situation
is
go back to the jurisdictionary. No, it's not too late. Go back to the jurisdictionary course and
he's
breeze
gonna
through.
He's going to slam me with fines. I have so many citations, and four of them are misdemeanors. So he's going to throw me in the slammer if I don't pay up.
Right.
And then it's going to be like a... what do you call it? A debtor's prison? You can't get out of debtor's prison.
Well, look at if you're moving.
I don't have
if
any
you're,
children.
Listen. If you are moving from that court, which sounds like a town court, okay, and you're trying to move it to the state court, they don't have the jurisdiction to hear that case, okay, because your case, you have to have a cause of action, and they won't hear anything with someone trying to say that, you know, codes and statutes are unconstitutional. Okay, that automatically makes it the jurisdiction of the federal court. But you see, this is what you need to do. You have to go to the federal court and file there, okay, because you want to move for going, you're not getting due process. They can't just come out and fine you and put you in jail. The Constitution is crystal clear that you have to be, a jury of your peers, okay? You have to get the grand jury that has to do an indictment first. So you have to be indicted, okay? And once you're indicted, now they have to have a jury trial, okay? They can't do these things. Well, they do it all day long, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to write the case properly. You have to get a good wherefore clause in there.
So I can get an index number right now?
Well, you already got an index number.
Oh,
if that case
I see.
Is, you see, you don't have to pay in the federal court to move it to the federal court because it's an active case in a lower court. You're just moving it up to a higher court and in the proper jurisdiction. And you have
is that
to start off.
Is that an RJI?
No. Well, look, no, not in a federal court. Federal court charges.
I don't know. What do I do next? What is
I'm
my
trying
next
to tell you.
Step?
Listen.
Okay.
What the federal court, in the federal court, they give you one price. I think it's $400 or $410. But you don't have to pay that because you already have an index number in the lower court. They already initiated that upon you. They're coming out against you, okay? And they're claiming that you are a criminal, you know, that these are a criminal action, you can possibly go to jail with it or be fined, okay? Then that's got to make it criminal. Otherwise, they don't have the – it's a nisi prius court, if not, which makes it administrative. They don't have the power or the authority to fine or incarcerate, okay? All nisi prius courts. So now that they're coming out at you that way, they're claiming that they have the authority. They don't have jurisdiction. They're not giving you due process, okay? And that's what your battle is. Forget about the case itself to argue the statutes, the codes, and saying they're unconstitutional.
Okay.
Go right to, you're not giving me due process, and you don't have jurisdiction over me. You take, and that is the claim in federal court. You're moving it to federal court for that cause. For
do I do a motion? A motion to something?
No. You now become you move it to the federal court, you become the plaintiff and they become the defendant. You go after the judge and you go after the court itself and you go after the prosecutor. And you file it against them, moving it into the federal court, and you can push other things in there too. You can go for them for collusion and other stuff, but I'd keep it simple. I would go for a constitutional violation on a simple level of you're not getting due process and they don't have jurisdiction. Okay. And that's where your battle is. Now, how to write that case, you still need an affidavit for that case. You need you need to show that this court has jurisdiction. You need to lay that out. Beginning, you need to build your case and lay it out. I like to do titles and need paragraphs. There's so many paragraphs and another title and paragraph to lead it through. You got to number it properly. You can number the lines or you can get to the point and number the sentences. I like to number the lines. I do it every five points, every five lines, 5, 10, 15, 20. I also put page numbers on it anyway also. The jurisdictionary course, go there and look for the structure of filing a court case. And then get the rules. And they like to have a cover page, a federal cover page. Go look at our papers, and you'll see we have the whole structure in our page. Then if you have a point in law that you want to make a point about, you do a memorandum, and then you make reference in your court case to that memorandum, and you tell the judge that he needs to take judicial notice or cognizance of this fact of law. And then your memorandum proves the law. You lay it out, and you show that this is the law, this is the fact, and then he has to be obedient to that. And if the judge starts to move the case in different directions, you got to signal him to let him know that you're about ready to go after him. If you have to, you give him a writ of error. And by the way, you can rehear all this that I'm talking about by downloading tonight's open forum. Okay, so it'll be up there tonight or tomorrow morning, and you'll be able to download this and come to this, we're almost at the end of our program, the last half hour, 20 minutes, we're in that area, and you can re-listen to everything I'm saying, and then you can hit the tape and make notes and get all this stuff, but you have to get the structure of the case. go see how we structured the case, okay? Go up to our website and go to where is it? Go to grand jury, highlight grand jury, come down to docket, okay? And when you come to docket, you'll see all the cases. I would suggest taking these papers that where we filed against someone, okay? You go through these papers, and you should read most of them, but you'll look for a paper where you'll see that we have everything there, the summons. We don't have the RJI, which you don't need anyway, which is a request for judicial intervention. You don't need the index number paper because they already got an index number. and you'll see how we put a cover page on for the federal court and so on. So follow that process. You know, just kind of follow that structure and then put your own information in there. Okay?
Now I can file this, let's say I get this all together, and then if I file it, my court case is on the 22nd, so if I file it, like, with this week, in a couple of days, maybe I'll get it done maybe on the 7th. And if I file this, then
you file notice to the court that this court case has been moved for cause into the federal court. Okay? And really it's filing and that's how your paper really starts. You have your front cover page and then you have your breakdown of your headers and stuff, and then the case goes on and you start off, this case is being moved to the federal court for cause and what district, you know, where it's being moved to. And then you go through all of the just look at our cases and you'll see, you'll be able to structure yourself. You can actually use our memorandums of law, which will make a lot of points that you're going to want to make anyway in law. Mm-hmm. And then you can just cut and paste our memorandum of laws and then attach it to your case as an attachment and make reference to it, give them the point and conclusion of the law, and you put in caps. I would cap it in center it at the beginning of the paragraph to let the judge know that he is to be taken judicial notice. And then give them that judicial notice through the memorandum of law. You give them the conclusion in a small paragraph, but then give them a reference, see memorandum of law, or whatever it is that the law is that you're trying to make a point to. But remember, you want to fight jurisdiction, and you want to fight the due process. You're not getting it. And they don't have the jurisdiction. They're not giving you due process. They're incapable of giving you due process. And you want, you're really working to have that case thrown out. So you never have to make the battle against the unconstitutional, code violations.
I see.
And it's a lot easier for the judge to find for you now, okay? Because he's not really going up against the New World Order, you know, in a big way.
And
it's kind of quiet and saying, you know, I'm not getting my due process, and he can rule for you and have it thrown out and move on. And, some judges won't, but those are the guys you got to do writs of error. And if necessary, you move them from the bench and make them, I do it by adding them as a defendant. I make them a defendant. So
if I give notice, then I have 30 days until they give me a court.
No. Once you file that paper, okay, with the court, you want to serve it upon the, and you got to get a summons. You got to write a summons, got to be on top of it, and you got to serve the summons and all the paperwork to everyone that's involved. If you're going after the judge and the prosecutor, that's the two people you got to serve.
Do I call him the district attorney? Or
usually it's a district attorney, yeah.
And do I need his name?
Well, you can go after the actual DA himself. He's responsible for all his underlings anyway.
Say summons to district attorney.
You got to write a summons, and you got to make them defendants. They become defendants. The judge is a defendant. The prosecutor is a defendant, and then you got to serve to the court for the court to let it be known a copy of that has been moved to the federal court. That court should know enough to stop now. They should know. They need to stop. And you can get protection from the federal court now if they don't stop, okay?
Oh. How do I ask them for protection?
Well, why don't you get that process going, get it moving, and then we'll talk about that at another time.
All right.
Okay?
So right now I just need to send a notice to the judge do I sentence the judge and the, did you say the attorney? Or the
prosecutor, which is the DA usually, yeah. The town DA or whatever.
The prosecutor of the people of the state of New York, town of Brookhaven?
No. Each town has their own district attorney.
Or do I say the prosecutor of the district court?
I don't know. It could be. I don't think they're working off the county district attorney. I think they're working. I think each town has their own district attorney, if I remember right. But I don't remember.
So what, I would say
look, all you got to do is ask the court who's prosecuting this case. Who's the attorney? Okay.
Get the name.
You should know that. It should be on the paperwork anyway. If you've been served with something, his name and for you to respond to is on there.
I never got any paperwork. He gave me a little sheet of paper, said, go to the Central Islip Courthouse on September
20th. Yeah, it's a real rinky-dink kangaroo town court that has no power, no authority. But people, look at, there's nothing, as Thornton says, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance and action. If people believe that this is the reality, then guess what? They got the power and the authority to put you in jail physically. They don't have it lawfully, but they have it physically, and that's a problem.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, you can, come back and ask more questions on next Monday, and we'll try to help you out some more. But look at you. You've got
to
look at the structure.
The judge.
If you don't look,
to the judge? Oh,
it's not a notice. No, you are filing a court case. You are coming in as a plaintiff, okay? And you want to do yourself in pro per, maybe, probably. That's what I would do. In pro per. It's in your own person, and you have to have a summons. You have to have, under the summons, you have to have a title sheet for the federal court, and then your case is written as if it's written on any other court case with the heading, you know, who's against who versus who, and you leave the judge open, judge, and leave a blank. You can use give the town index number, move for cause. And then you have to tell the court that they have jurisdiction, show them how they have jurisdiction, because this is a violation of the Constitution, and you can show them in the Constitution that they have the jurisdiction here. That's Article 3. Go read that in the Constitution. You'll pick that up clearly. I think it's in the first paragraph. It tells you this is what the jurisdiction is. You want to put that in there. You're moving it for cause. And you build your case along that way. You make sure you have a good wherefore clause. The court, you want to tell the court exactly what you're expecting that court to do, okay?
Should I just say that I would like my case thrown out?
Basically? No, you just tell them, you go, look at, I would sue them. You want, the final line is you want them to close that case, of course, okay? That's got to be in the wherefore clause. But I would go after them for damages. Look at, figure out your damages. Maybe it's $5,000 or $10,000 per, you know, what's your time worth? And you got to figure that out. What's your damages? Mm-hmm. How much stress you've been under? And you may say, okay, for every Constitution violation against me, I'm going to charge $5,000. And you might have six or $10,000. You might have six violations that you can lay out. So you're looking for either $30,000 or $60,000. You know, and that's your way. You're looking for some kind of a monetary claim, number one. You're also moving the court to quash the case, quash the case. I'm not sure what word you'd use, but start with the word quash. Look into that and look around. You'll find a good word to use, but I think quash is good. Or you can order them to. Oh, there's language. You can go into some of the papers we filed for nonjudicial foreclosures, cease and desist. You want that court to cease and desist. That's a good word, okay? And you're expecting a damage, a financial, claim. So your wherefore clause is important. And you want to make sure that you start off with a court of record. You listen to Thornton. You say I, and then you put your name, here and after, plaintiff, one of the people of New York sues, and you put the names of the people. You know, you follow the process. You can learn about this in jurisdictionary, and you can learn about this through thought. Kind of meshing together.
And so On the right-hand side, it'll be case number, the case I have number here, and then the judge. Do I put the same judge, my judge
nope,
name?
No, it's a new judge now. Nope. You su- yeah,
judge.
You put the judge as a defendant. You're suing the judge.
Defendant. I got you. Then I write... Yeah.
Now you, so he's a defendant. He's a defendant on the left side of the paper. You're going to put judge at a line with no name on it because you don't know what judge is going to be chosen for this. So you just leave that open. And then you put index number with a line. We put a federal index number, FED index number with a line. You don't know what it is. Leave it blank. And then you put the town court index number. You put that number in there, and you know, all that information.
The case that I have now.
The
town.
Yeah.
Use
the town case. Yeah, town has
town
a number.
Case. I see. Yes.
You got to make sure you give all the information to the court, the names, the address, and the phone numbers of the judge, which would be the court. That's fine. The name and address of the court that's being moved from, the name and address of the prosecutor, which is the lawyer on the other side. You get all that stuff, and of course you make the point that you're pursuing in proper, in your own person, not pro se, in proper, P-E-R, P-R-O-P-E-R, two words, P-R-O-P-E-R, I-N-P-R-O-P-E-R, in proper. So your name, you know, where your signature is going to be, you put your name, you know, whatever your name is, and then comma underneath your signature area, comma, I-N space, P-R-O space, P-E-R, in proper.
Okay.
I would do that in caps, but it could be done in small letters. I don't think it really matters either way. It doesn't matter. I'd leave it in little letters, in proper.
And is this at the end of the paper, or this is like in the?
Well, yeah, that's where you signed it at the end. And,
at the end, right?
At the end.
My name and in proper, and then the date or something. I'll check the other.
Right, you want to have the date, and then you want to have a place for the signature for a notary because you want to. You want to do a as an affidavit. This complaint is going to be as an affidavit, okay? You want to attach an affidavit too. So you, no, I do it on both papers. We do it on the case.
One at the end of the case, and then a separate
one on your
paper.
Affidavit, which is attached, which you make reference to from your case.
I see.
And now,
where do I put my
called,
address?
You want to put a verified. You want to put a verified complaint on the top right side, underneath the index number, and all the information finalized, which is to the left of the name. Which is the captions, you know, with all the names, this one against that one. And on the right side, you put the words verified in, and I would put that in all capital letters. I don't like to use all capital letters. What I do is I'll do capital V and spell out the word verified, capital C, spell out complaint. And then I would highlight that and do small caps so that you have the little caps in front of one big cap, which is the A and and V, verified complaint, V and C.
What do you mean by small caps? There's only one size.
When you highlight the letters, you have one big cap and you have all little fonts, okay, the lowercase. When you highlight all those letters, you right-click and you click on font. And then when font page opens up, a little font box opens up, you can click on what's called small caps. It may just say SM caps, but small caps, SMALL caps. Check that box, click OK, and now your lowercase becomes little caps, which is smaller than the big cap for the capital letter for the beginning of the word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's just a fancy thing to do. I don't like to use caps too often on a whole word.
Oh.
Huh?
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, my program doesn't do that. So,
okay, well then you could just cap the first letter. Don't worry about it.
Oh, and then
bolden it up. Put a bolden on it. A verified complaint means it's sworn to.
Okay.
When you get to the bottom, you're going to sign it in front of a notary, and then you're going to make copies of all that and send it to all the people. You want to do it with a summons. If you fail to put a summons in there, they play the game and they throw it out. So be careful.
So a summons and a notice. Do I put the note? But I don't. I send the notice and I send a summons the same day, or I wait?
Well, the summons is the notice.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but it says summons, and it tells you you are being summoned to court to answer, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's plenty of that. You'll find some of that stuff on our website. You'll find the summons example in the Juris Dictionary.
Oh.
I think even Bill Thornton has an example. You run a summons on his case, on his page, and you'll probably find an example there. I try to make my case look as much as possible as the lawyers teach to do it.
Right.
Okay, except for where I have a problem, then I move in a different direction. I might do it the way Thornton teaches it, or I might create my own.
Now, they're not going to take it at the 6th District Court, so Bill Thornton said that you can go to any court in the county. Do you ever hear him say that?
Bill Thornton has errors, and I'm trying to tell you, Bill Thornton asked me one time when I was talking with him, and he says, John, do you want to win or do you want to fight? And I got his point. I want to win. I don't want to fight. I just want to get it done with. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I want.
So follow the process. You want to win? Go after them for constitutional violations. Have that whole case thrown out under that. And you don't have to argue the code. You don't have to tell them that they're unconstitutional. That's just a fight that you don't want to get into. Okay.
Anyway, when I file, he said that something about if they won't file it, because
No. The federal court will file this case. You could do a file on demand with it. The federal court will take this case. You go down, file it personally with the federal court. They will take it. Now remember, you got to rewrite your case, not making your argument against the code violation. You're not fighting that. You're fighting the fact that this town court doesn't have authority or power or jurisdiction over you. They're not giving you any due process. They want to put me in jail. They want to take away my things. They don't have the power to do it because they don't have the jurisdiction. And also, they're not capable of giving me the due process that is required in order for them to do it. I would even go back as far as saying, look, if you want to put me in jail, you need to get the people to agree to that, and you need to go get an indictment on me, okay? And then I want a jury, and I don't want a six-man jury. I want a 12-man untainted jury under the common law who understands jury nullification. Huh?
And I should say all this in the paper?
Well, you may not get into the jury nullification, what you're requiring of the jury or anything, but you are going to get into the fact that they don't have the jurisdiction, they don't have the authority, they're not giving you due process, they're incapable of giving you a fair trial, and that's why you're moving it to this court for cause. Your first point is you're moving it for cause. You've got to make that right up front in your paperwork, in your case. It's paragraph by paragraph by paragraph.
Okay. But how do I find out where I want to file at the federal court? But how do I find out where that is?
Well, you go on the internet and you look. You're in which county are you in Long Island?
I'm in Suffolk County.
Okay, go into Suffolk County and look for the federal district court. It's the Eastern Court. What do they call it? New York State. Not New York State. It is. I think. New York State District of District of New York, I think it says, and it gives you the southern of in your case, I think it's the Eastern District. So it's the Eastern District of New York. Go on the website. Go on Google, and look for the federal court. You'll find it. And it'll give you all the courts. You'll find the one that's in Long Island, and it's called the Eastern District Court of New York.
Eastern District. That's real helpful. Thanks.
Okay.
Talk is super helpful.
All right, well, look, you got a lot of work to do, and you can come on next week and ask more questions. Try to get in early and get into the queue early so we can get you up front.
Okay, because I just wasn't sure how to... Was that, are you supposed to press... Star six, one, or just star six. You hit star six,
and then it'll tell you to press something else. I don't remember what.
Maybe
Jen's still on.
Mute. If you press star six, it's mute. and then star 6, it's unmute.
No, to get into the queue, you hit star 6, and then I guess it tells you to hit 1, right, Jan?
Yeah,
right.
You get into the queue. So I only.
But now you're waiting until you get called. So get in the queue early, and we'll try to get you up front. Okay.
Okay, because I was here at 9, but I just went off. I hung up once, and I did rang you up again because I thought maybe I pressed those numbers wrong, you know. And I did it twice actually, so I got all the way at the end, I guess. And I'm sorry to hold you on here so late.
Well, that's okay. I think it's been pretty informative for a lot of other people that to understand a little bit more about the structure of a court case, you know.
And I'll go over. I'll finish that course with Jurisdictionary, see if I can learn some more stuff on that too.
Okay.
To help me, and I.
All right. Well,
it.
Thanks for the call. We're over time, so I got to go. We're like 17
okay,
minutes
I
beyond.
Okay. I thank you too.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye bye. All right. We've come to the end of our call. I know we've got a couple more people in the queue. If you get in early on next Monday, we'll try to get you in. I'm sorry we couldn't get to you. But Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday, and we should be filing papers before then. So next Monday we'll be up with a new paper, and we're probably going to read it, and we'll have it posted, and we're moving along. So until then, God bless everyone, and again, help support us. We need financial support. Only asking for $5 a month or more. If you can give $20, fine, but $5 a month or more. Thank you. Good night.